Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, Rich, we have a SummerSlam main event or co-main event official. I would not say that there was a lot of suspense. And I'm not quite sure that adding Goldberg's son, Gage, to the storyline is going to really enhance people's enthusiasm for Goldberg. I think AEW has the right idea with Taz's son, that it's sort of a heat generator more than a sympathy generator. Your thoughts on Goldberg's promo and Lashley's acceptance of it on this show? Rich, I think you're muted. Rich, you are muted. Rich, you're showing up as muted on the Skype board. Hopefully I'm not also muted. Stand by. Now I can hear you, Rich.
Yeah, I'm going to just say Comcast. I gave them too many compliments and leave it.
Sounds good. So what do you think of... We're good. We don't need to bore people with our technical problems here. What do you think of the announcement and the way they played out, making official Goldberg and Lashley?
Well, I think I will gently disagree with you on the Gage situation, because I saw a lot of people felt like there was he got recast since last we saw him. And I guess for those of them who don't remember puberty, it changes some of us in ways that maybe, you know, you go from a little gangly kid to now you're a strapping teen. And, you know, he had the look of someone. I while you said that they do a good job at AEW with Hook, I think in 2023, a Hook Gage tag team is just what the world needs. So remember this when you guys see those two guys wreaking havoc somewhere in the wrestling world. Go ahead.
Well, let me gently ask you, what do you think has people more excited about Goldberg versus Lashley because of somewhat disinterested looking teenage son half-heartedly fist bumped his dad and then got yelled at by MVP and then left? Like, I'm not quite sure where that gets people more excited about this match. So what are people saying on social media that makes you think now this match is people are more interested?
I think it was more the ending of it. So him standing up and being an awkward teen against this giant hulking man who's trying to pick on him. And then afterward turning into just bro central, tapping his dad on the back. He's like, all right, let's go. So the stuff with his dad was definitely very awkward. And also his dad with the audience, because the audience was not having him. Between the boos and the chance to see him punk chance and all the other chants that they used to kind of throw the flow of the conversation off. Goldberg, unlike some of the folks I'll get to as we get throughout the evening, did probably the worst, and they gave him the most time to talk. So that was the worst combination they could do. And cues that they were trying to set up for him, it really, none of that in terms of piece by piece led to, hey, we want to see these two guys fight. But by the time you got to the half-hearted spear of MVP, I think it was as good as it was going to get, and allowed them to say, okay, we can put up the graphic now that we've had for like 3 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, my thought on Goldberg's promo is Goldberg was Goldberg. You know, I mean, if you like a guy chomping gum and yelling in somebody's face and, you know, halfway through the promo, perhaps kind of losing his place and pacing and smiling and then kind of regathering himself. I mean, it was fine. I mean, I thought the crowd at times was sort of into chanting Goldberg because it's a thing to do, but I didn't sense – I mean, there were times when they went to the crowd and they couldn't find anyone cheering early on when MVP, you know, mentioned Goldberg's name, and they cut to the crowd and no one was cheering. I know what he said. He said, everybody here is very excited to see Goldberg. And that's when they cut to the crowd, and, like, everyone's just standing there. And I was like, okay, that didn't go well. It's kind of like when Cena thinks it's a split reaction towards him and actually everyone's cheering him. I think Goldberg won them over a little bit just because when he showed up, it's like, oh, yeah, this is the icon, and I remember him way back. But I don't know. I mean, I watched this, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of par for the course. You're not going to get anything new from Goldberg, and that's fine. I'm absolutely not expecting at 54 years old or 105 for him to reinvent himself. But that said, it doesn't change the fact that it's still just a very paper-thin, one-dimensional act, chomping gum and yelling. And talking about a spear, and I mean, there's not a lot you can do with it, and I don't think anybody thinks he's going to win. And if he does, no one's going to be happy. So, you know, it really does just come down to having Goldberg on SummerSlam makes it feel a little more special than if it were, you know, Lashley against Drew again, I guess. But it won't make the show better.
Yeah, and I had to sympathize with Goldberg because I do that same walk whenever I, you know, either partially tear my groin or mess with my knee running. Where you're just straight legged and kind of almost like swinging a hip over the other one. And I feel for it because I think back to when he said it a couple of years ago, the physical toll it takes to look like Goldberg, and at 54, it hasn't gotten easier. He looks more like old school Goldberg, but it looks like that trade-off is my man's hurting. I felt like it was leg day and he had to fly cross country and now he's got to come out here and do a promo he forgot halfway through and kind of survive it. And so, this is not the crowd to survive with.
So my question is, why do you feel sorry for him? He's being paid a ton of money to be physically and mentally capable of entertaining you by doing the bare minimum. And you're saying, and this isn't, I mean, yes, I get sympathy for him personally, but it's like, I'm not going to sit here and like feel sorry for him. He's getting paid more money for doing what he did there than most people make in 10 years of their career after going to college and paying loans and working two jobs to pay him off. And if he's not physically and mentally capable to step up, I'm not going to feel sorry for him. I blame WWE for continuing to, you know, offer him money. But if there's people who still think, oh, I want to see the legend Goldberg and, you know, they think it's worth it, that's fine. But I'm not going to feel bad for Goldberg at all. I mean, he's 54 years old and he's making a lot of money for something you're saying he's physically incapable of even walking to the ring to do.
Well, see, here's where I disagree on that one, because I always file under the get your bag when you can rule. And so with him, I feel bad because if he was in a promotion that actually cared about hiding any of those weaknesses instead of trying to just suck whatever they could out of him before the husk hits the ground, sure. I'm with you 100%. But I think in this case, neither the We Want Wyatt chance nor whatever they – because they opened up with the age. Like, age doesn't matter because I'll always be Goldberg. I live by the spear and you're going to die by it. And it's like this is not him. Like, I'd rather him be doing, you know, a warrior-esque nonsensical Goldberg rant than this whatever pablum they came up for him, because I get that you're trying to keep it simple, but that was almost just something I would expect out of the old Batman series and not something that Goldberg typically would do, which would be him just growling and snarling. He was like 80% less snarl, and I was very surprised by that. And I think it was, to your point, him trying to kind of play within the colored line that they set for him. And then they grab Gage, who isn't an actor. He's a teenager, and God bless any teenager who's going to try to be a rude teen on television. But that's not what you do, especially someone who this isn't like when Flair was saying goodbye to a young Charlotte before he thought, you know, this is going to be my career-ending match. Even then, if you look at Charlotte back then, she was a little awkward. This is even worse because it's live. At least with a pre-tape, you can kind of do stuff and make it look a little bit more dramatic. But this, it's just, the kid wasn't ready. I mean, he did better at the end, like I said, you know, tongue in cheek, as far as like tapping his dad, like, hey, let's go. He was actually on his mark before his dad was, which was scary. But yeah, this whole thing and the spear, I would generously say ran. I would say took a couple of steps and then MVP jumped into it. And this crowd, we'll get to it for the rest of the evening, though, this crowd did not help them in any way.
Well, Yes. We'll save that. You're right. I was going to go to it now. But let's pause and introduce ourselves and set the table here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, August 2nd, 2021. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program tonight, and the editor and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, covering news, live TV coverage, live pay-per-view coverage, editorials, and much more on a daily basis. Hope you're checking it out. That's pwtorch.com. I'm also the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast in post shows, along with a variety of VIP audio shows, including one with today's co-host, Rich Fan, from the VIP podcast, Everything with Rich Fan. That drops usually Sundays or Mondays, or both in the case of this week. We had two sessions this week, about an hour on average each. Rich, welcome back to the post show. It's been a while since we've done a post show live together. Good to have you.
Yeah, good to be on. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to doing calls and chatting through this Monday, as always, whenever it's a Monday night and Wade makes the puts up the fan signal. I am ready to go through the whole thing. And the word I was looking for earlier during the Monday edition was flagellation. I thank my friend Chris for reminding me, flagellation, in terms of, like, I was ready. I was all in, with the exception of a sound gaffe on my end that I accidentally had two screens up. My television had Raw, and then I was trying to finish up Stardom's five-star Grand Prix. And I was like, wait a minute. I don't think Lily is in a feud with Fukigen Death, so let me just make sure to turn the volume up. But we'll talk about volume, the fun things you can do with volume and not really paying attention to what recording you're using. So I'm looking forward to today's chat with you and, of course, the audience.
Excellent. Well, our number, if you want to join us on the program, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Or as Jimmy Smith would say, Wade Keller Podcast. Anyway, he always sounds like he's yelling at a loud concert while trying to lift a truck. And I just don't get why he has to talk this way for 3 hours about everything. Actually, he was a little better this week. There were moments where I felt like I could hear him, like he would normally sound like a normal human being, instead of that wincing, straining, yelling thing that he's been doing that he thinks wrestling announcers do. And I was so happy when I heard that he was capable of that. So more of that, please. One note, I started the show. We do a 3-hour window, co-live. We never filled 3 hours, but I started it at the start of Raw instead of at the time Raw ended. So I had the wrong link up on social media and on our page because we just never logged on to do the show because it was during Raw. I do that like twice a year. When I set the time, yeah. I set it for the start of Raw instead of the end of Raw. So, that means we've just got, because we confuse people, some people are catching up to us here, but maybe a slightly shorter line for calls than usual. So it's a good chance to give us a call if you want to be on the show and talk about tonight's Raw. We also, I checked with some of our previous Chicago correspondents. One of them moved back to Australia because of COVID. Another one said I spent all my money for the United Center AEW tickets. Another one just said I never watch Raw anymore. And nobody volunteered to join us as the Raw on-site correspondent on tonight's show, which is crazy because it's Chicago and it was sold out at Allstate Arena. So if you're listening to us live and you attended in Chicago, give us a call and tell us what it was like in the building. We'd love to get your in-person perspective. And if you are listening and you're from Chicago and you go to a future WWE show, please don't assume Chicago's a huge market and everyone's going to volunteer, because in this case, nobody left who normally volunteered for us was available. So Chicago so far has let us down. You're the first city since crowds came back to let us down without an on-site correspondent. So shame, but also congrats for selling out United Center for AEW. There's a lot of wrestling fans there. And we'd love to hear from somebody who might be listening to us who attended tonight. So that's a call to action. If you do plan to attend a future Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown, let me know ahead of time if you're willing to be an on-site correspondent sometime in the hour to hour and a half after the TV show ends. And we can bring you on the show and talk for 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, whatever makes sense for you and in terms of the show itself, and get your take on what happened in the building. We always have questions for on-site correspondents that helps add perspective to the full experience of the show. You can email me and let me know. Put the name of the city in the subject line and the date of the show. If you don't name the city, when I search my inbox, the city won't pop up, and then I might not remember you emailed, because obviously we're juggling dozens and dozens of future events here. So putting the name of the city in the subject line really helps. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. As I'm going to throw out my voice here if I do Jimmy Smith much more. So I'll stop there. I don't know how he does it. I do not know how he does that. That is the same email address as noted if you just want to comment on tonight's show. My co-host, as noted, is Rich Fan from the Everything with Rich Fan podcast that I host with him every week. And we are ready to start taking calls. So let's go ahead and bring on first the let's make sure we don't have a Chicago caller calling us right away. Nope. So we'll start with Jay in Hartford first. Jay, welcome to the show. What did you think of Raw tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Rich. I thought it was a pretty good show tonight. Thanks for taking my call. I haven't seen the full show yet. Started watching late, and I'm still catching up. But I called about Rhea Ripley. I'm trying to get into her character on the main roster, and it's pretty hard. After the match, I didn't understand her reasoning for attacking Nia Jax. And funny enough, my wife, casual fan wife, actually explained it to me. She goes, the first thing she says, Wade, was, she goes, isn't that her MO? And I'm like, what do you mean? I said, are you saying, is that her finisher? You know, she goes, no, isn't that like her thing? Isn't that what she does? Like attack people after the match. And I'm like, I don't think that's her thing. I said, oh, you remember when she attacked Charlotte a few weeks ago? And she's like, yeah. And that just really caught me off guard that my wife, like, that stood out to her, and she doesn't pay attention as, you know, she's just often in the room when I'm watching, and, you know, she knows who people are, and she is kind of into it. But to her, that's Rhea Ripley's thing, and that just kind of caught me. Like, that's all she knows about her is that she attacks people after the matches. And I just – and my wife went on to explain, she goes, well, I think she did it because, you know, to show that, like, the victory wasn't a fluke, that she didn't just beat Nia because of the whole, you know, Shayna up on the ring apron thing. And I'm thinking, okay, I guess you have a point, but I hated it. Like, if Rhea is a babyface, like, and it was the same with Nikki A.S.H. later attacking Charlotte with the chair, and maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe it was to send a message before the match, but to me, that's not a baby face. Like, they're supposed to be, you know, have like a moral, like, you won the match, just go on about your way and go prepare for your triple threat at SummerSlam. So I'm still not into Rhea Ripley. I still don't think she's being presented in a focused manner that can make me either like her or dislike her. And really, I dislike the way she's being presented. She hasn't been super heelish, but she really hasn't given me a reason to go, oh yeah, she's, you know, someone I want my daughter to look up to, for example. So I don't know. What do you think about how they're handling her right now?
Yeah, no, good question. Rich, I thought this was a good night for Ripley in one sense. She's clearly booked as a babyface, with the exception of what Jay brings up, which is this idea that Vince McMahon has, and he showed it with Nikki Cross earlier, as Jay also astutely pointed out, where baby faces are attacking heels from behind, unprovoked. Like, you could say, well, 2 weeks ago, this heel said this about her, so her pride was unlike. No, that's not provoking. You still should have better standards than that. So I did not like that with either Nikki or Ripley. So with that as part of the conversation, I'm glad that Ripley, that it appears they're going all out with Ripley as a babyface, because in WWE and Vince McMahon's booking, attacking someone from behind is not a heel move. And she clearly, with her babyface, her promos too appear to be babyface promos.
Yeah, the first thing I would say is with Rhea, and maybe you all, I have a question afterward that maybe you both could solve for me. Rhea, I thought your wife Jay was going to go back to the fact that she did the same thing with Asuka as well, where she would sneak attack and it was kind of showing her aggression, and that's just a Vince McMahon trope of, if an aggressive face is doing heelish tactics, you'll always hear the announcer mention they're just taking advantage of a situation, or they're just showing a side of themselves they haven't shown before, or anything silly like that. And yeah, it just, it does not fit with what she should be as far as just a straight up face. Same thing with Nikki A.S.H. If she's going to play the greatest American hero and she's going to be the almost superhero that is trying to do the right thing and hugging kids and hopping into the crowd at the end of the night to find a kid with a sign. And I'm like, ma'am, that is, I okay. I think sneaking up on Charlotte is the last thing you need to do. And my question is, looking at Rhea, when did they give her the Robin R under her eye? Is that new? Did I miss that?
I didn't
have an eyeshadow. There was a little R with her, like the stylized R under her, I guess it would be her left eye.
Yeah, no, I don't remember her having it before. Do you, Jay? Or does your wife? Maybe we should ask her. Jay, I muted you. There's some background noise. Go ahead. Now you're live.
Oh, well, great. Yeah, I was laughing at that. So I don't know. Yeah, it didn't really jump out to me tonight. So maybe, yeah, I didn't really catch it. I'll have to go back and pay more attention. So I don't think she's had it before, though, when you explain it.
Okay. Because I know looking at her photo when they did the post, like anytime they have the base photo of the person, it wasn't there. So I was like, okay, it's not in their stock photo yet of her. So it has to be relatively new.
But it does seem, Rich, to you that Ripley is clearly now being framed as she should have been from the beginning as a babyface. And so if we stipulate to that as being self-apparent, how damaged is she because she was put out there acting in ways like she did tonight, you know, attacking people from behind, but other instances too that led Jay to think, well, that's just her makeup. So her push has been flawed even through tonight, but the way that she talks, the way the announcers talk about her, and the fact that she was matched against a heel one-on-one and wrestled babyface style, she's clearly a babyface. But how much momentum is lost, and did you get a sense of how the audience was reacting to her in Chicago through the TV?
I think that the sooner, and this isn't a knock on Charlotte, but it's going to sound like, well, the sooner they get her away from Charlotte, the better she's going to be, just like last time. It seems like that would be a great pairing as far as their size, their athleticism, their personalities. But the more they interact with each other, the more it has a diminishing effect on Rhea in terms of her stardom and her faceness. Because you saw even during the feud prior to Nikki A.S.H., the whole story had been for the last few weeks before that, she's starting to take on Charlotte's tricks to beat Charlotte, and Charlotte appreciates the chicanery.
It is the way that Ripley has been promoted since she arrived. How much has it been a setback for her? I know I get what you're saying about what to do with her going forward, but even if you correct everything and create an ideal fertile ground for her to become a star, how far back, how much has she lost momentum because of how she has been framed in an ambiguous way at best, or maybe an overtly heel way, that just slowed what I think would be momentum out of the gate as this rising. Even, you know, Jay says, I don't really get her. And I think Vince McMahon didn't really know what to do with her. But I think she could have been a megastar by now. And I feel like she's just trying to get herself out of quicksand still.
Yeah, I think the mistake they made was they saw her and they treated her like an anti-hero or as a person that you just, like the girl from the wrong side of town. And what they should have done was treated her like Lita when she was ascending as a face. Just let her go out, show her personality, and then base her opponents off of that. So she needed, in the case of Rhea Ripley, you know, more of the Tamina's and the Nia's and the those sorts of people, where like a bigger opponent, clearly a heel. She can move around, show she's strong and yet agile enough to get out of their way. And then if you have a smaller opponent, make sure that opponent is clearly a heel and she isn't picking on them. And you're going to be good, because once you sit down and talk with her, or once she gets to do her promos, you're going to see she's cool. And then men and women are going to see her as cool. But instead, it's this.
Yeah, the leading comparison's good. The leading comparison's good, yeah. And then that's, I think, what Vince just for whatever reason didn't get. Jay, anything else you want to add to that or bring up otherwise?
To your point, as down as I am on the way she's being presented right now, I think that she has cover based on the fact that there weren't crowds the first few weeks that they put her out there. And I thought she actually got a good response tonight. So if they can,
yeah.
you know, as you kind of said, get her away from Charlotte, right? Like if she's, the crowd was totally behind her against Nia. And if she can, I don't know, go to Eva Marie next, because I don't really think they have a ton of heels for her to face off against besides Charlotte, right? I think the crowd would just kind of eat that up with, you know, Eva maybe avoiding, you know, Rhea getting her hands on her or something like that. So I think she can recover with crowds being back now. But, yeah, I just hope they, yeah, take the
she
make some better decisions
Jay,
with how they present her.
And she's the one who I think got hurt a lot by not having crowds around, because it allowed because of the circumstances, it allowed Vince McMahon to look at her through his lens rather than hear the crowd and adjust his thoughts on her. Because I think fans would have been cheering her all along, and WrestleMania was clunky. It didn't go well, and I think he lost confidence in her. She lost confidence in herself, but the booking wasn't there to support her either. And had crowds been there, I think they would have been more forgiving of some early trip-ups, and they would have steered Vince in the right direction earlier. And that's where I just think, you know, I think she's good enough, she can make a comeback. You know, we've seen enough good from her in NXT, but it's unfortunate. But I think they're on the right course now, and that's, it's, you know, better late than never, as someone once said. Actually, a lot of people say a lot. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll throw one more point in there, unless you get to some other callers.
Sure, yep.
And it's come up lately, but the amount of rematches is from week to week on Raw is becoming a bit unbearable. So I'm 37, right? And I've been watching WWE since, I don't know, 89 or something. And as bad as it can get at times, like between my loyalty and between, you know, the things that I like and the superstars that I like I've never once said, okay, no more Raw. You know, that's it. I'm not watching. Like, even if I feel like, oh, the show was horrible tonight, I'm not watching next week. Of course I'm going to watch, right? It's just what I do. I've done it for 30 plus years. I'm getting there, though. Like, I'm getting to, like,
yeah.
I feel like I can just miss a show. And I could not believe, like I said, I started watching Raw late. And just another side note, like, I watched through the Sling app. That's how I get USA Network. And they did an
yep.
update recently that has not been favorable to any viewing. Like, the DVR feature with the fast forward rewind has been horrible. You can't watch from the beginning on your phone. It's anyway, so. When I turned on the show and Karrion Kross was coming to the ring, and they were, I think they did the replay of last week or something. And then they go, oh, but he has another chance against Keith Lee tonight. And I'm thinking, no, not again. And then they announced
yeah.
it's Charlotte and Nikki again. It's no holds barred this time, but there's no Mason T-Bar against, you know, Mansoor and Ali. There's, what am I watching for? Like, I don't get it. I don't understand how they think that this is a, you know, I've never booked a television show, so what do I know? But I'm a viewer, you know, I know what I like as a viewer, and I enjoy AEW and WWE. So, you know, I'm not for one or the other, right? But, and I hate to have to compare, but AEW just gets it right. Like, fresh matchups every week on Dynamite, and WWE could absolutely do that. But for some reason, I guess Vince or whomever, they think this is the way to tell stories. And will we ever see a change? Or I don't know. That's my last thing tonight. But it's becoming, it's just much. It's been a bit much for a long time now, but it's just getting worse.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, I mean, I compare it to Nitro a lot where, you know, we're going to hear way more than we probably want in terms of comparisons between Dynamite and Raw/SmackDown and Nitro Thunder compared to Raw when Raw took over, because there's going to be, you know, it's going to be probably oversimplified too much at times. But that said, there are some valid comparisons. And I think one of them is that Nitro had better ratings than the quality of the show for quite a while. And then it was too late before when viewers started leaving, it was viewers who were really patient for a long time with a shoddy product. And now, and it got to the point where, like, the goodwill was lost. And, you know, Jay is an example of that, Rich. The viewers who are watching mm-hmm. out of habit, and they're, you know, and statistically, Raw skews older on average than Dynamite, although there's still more young male viewers watching Raw most weeks than Dynamite. It's close. It's not even close in terms of viewership. I mean, there's like a 50% or so higher viewership in Raw if you take kind of a relevant recent average. So there's still a lot more kids and people over age 50 to win over or slash drive away before AEW catches up there. But it is an issue. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not like worried on a personal level for Vince McMahon's wealth or well-being, but if I'm WWE and I'm fighting to try to keep the company in good shape, I worry that Vince McMahon isn't realizing that that there are people who are watching, not hate watching, but watching with that attitude of, I'm getting less out of this. I'm watching out of tradition. I'm not sure how much longer I'm going to give them before I can be won over. And so your thoughts on that, Rich, and then I want to read the results of a Twitter poll we put up on what people would most like to see changed about Raw to get them more enthusiastic about watching.
To answer the first question before we get to the poll, the biggest issue is the issue that Jay mentioned and then you kind of alluded to as far as hate watching. I think a lot of folks are watching out of tradition and out of fandom, but they want to see more. And like Jay, I felt bad because I could hear in his voice, he didn't want to have to say it, but he's seeing it on another product. Like, you know, I could say I'm watching in Stardom or I'm watching Gleep or, you know, DDT or, you know, my buddy Bolo sending me stuff from Mid-South and I'm still seeing, you know, variety that I don't see now. It all works and it doesn't have to be something where you're saying WWE or currently Raw stinks because you have an axe to grind against the company. More or less, it's because you have an axe to grind against the format that has not changed in 30 years. And I think that's the problem. If you think you could have, like you mentioned WCW, we've had cases where, you know, through the lack of creativity, they created those Best of Seven series, which then became iconic, but that wasn't always necessarily the original plan. Or, you know, I mentioned earlier this weekend on the deep dive, you know, when you look at between CMLL, New Japan, and Ring of Honor, the Hiromu / Kamitachi, Dragon Lee matches, they started just as a speed series where it's like we need two guys to go crazy, and then it went into full Peter versus the Chicken. As soon as they start the match, it is between 7 and 20 minutes of them building on the prior matches that they might not have planned for, but now they know has become a story. That isn't it here. We'll get the exact same match every week for 3 weeks in a row, and the only thing changes is who wins the stretch and finish. And so they should have to be very careful with that, especially you look at that Keith Lee match, and you get to the end. He wins. He's happy. He's in tears, which I'm sure some callers might bring up as well. Like he is deeply affected by this and the crowd isn't, and that's not good because they were with him up into the pop, but they're just waiting, you know, okay, is someone going to hit him from behind? Are they going to see, you know, we're going to see this on TV next week. And that's just, that is not a way for you to kind of sustain enjoyment from people who really, it should be easy to retain.
Yes. Okay. So I asked, what change would make you more enthusiastic about watching Raw? And I asked this right before Raw started, or maybe right after it started. And 420 votes are in. And the number one choice out of four that I offered, the number one choice was a 2-hour format instead of a 3. 36% said that would make the biggest difference. The next best was less matchup repetition, which we just talked about, 27%. 24% came in third place, more characters more aimed at adults, and then 14% was more authentic promos. A lot of people in the comments area, though, Rich, said, can we choose all of the above? So I find it interesting that a big thing that is trying people's patience, and this was a problem, you know, we knew would happen, going back to when Raw went to 3 hours, is it's so hard to be a completist if you want to be a completist, unless the product is red hot. And even if it's red hot, 3 hours is a lot. I was at SmackDown on Friday in person at Target Center in Minneapolis, and it was a really fun 2 hours and 15 minutes, counting the dark match, after the show was over. But as fun as it was, as high energy as the crowd was, I didn't really want to sit there for another hour. You know, I was thinking, man, what if there was another hour? And so it's just, you know, it's greed. It's finance. It's financial. It's not about serving the fan. And eventually when you make decisions based on serving Wall Street and trying to come up with artificial ways to inflate your revenue that isn't that it grows out of proportion to fan enthusiasm for your product or fan satisfaction, it eventually catches up to you. It happened with Nitro when Eric Bischoff expanded Nitro to 3 hours and accepted the money from TBS for Thunder. And he told me in a Torch Talk I did with him a decade ago, that was the biggest regret he had. It would have been so much easier to not, it would have been better to not take the money and play the long game than to take the money. And I was interested. I didn't know what answer would get the biggest pick, but I think people right now are like, you know what? I'll give Raw a chance, but not for 3 hours. And I think that's a big issue. And I just don't know if there's any will within, you know, WWE or USA to sacrifice short-term revenue for long-term stability. But man, I think it would make a big difference for so many viewers if they said, yeah, Raw's not great, but I can sit through 2 hours and be loyal and try to see this through. But ask for three? Nah, I'm going to go do something else or watch something else.
Yeah, and you see the numbers when people tail off in the third hour, as well as the fact, you know, for myself, especially when I'm coming on here, I try not to come in. I want to come in with a clear mind and not instantly, you know, knives out, so to speak, when it comes to Raw, because I don't think that's an enjoyable experience for someone listening. Maybe I'm proven wrong. Maybe people want to hear it. But I know personally, whenever I listen to other shows or if I listen to a Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post show, I'm not necessarily looking for you or whomever the guest is to, you know, lament the time they spent watching it. Because that's like, okay, why are we torturing these people? And I think some people do. There is a market in pro wrestling podcasts for, you know, listening to someone, you know, whinge as they go through the whole thing. And there were some things I liked during Raw, but I did not like the fact that it was 3 hours. I abhor that. I absolutely think that at this point, especially with the money, you know, back when it first happened, I was one of the defenders with Jason Australia, as far as this was the money they were using to kind of use a seed for the Performance Center. But now that we've seen that the Performance Center and some of its denizens are treated the way they are, that's money from an ill fruit from an rotten tree, so to speak. And, so you might as well just cut your.
And Rich, I have an idea. How about Vince flies commercial instead, and we get a 2-hour Raw, and he takes the seed money from selling his private jet to building a Performance Center. I mean, I don't swear on this show, but like the idea that we're gonna take all this money for a third hour so we can afford to train wrestlers for a feeder system. I never bought that. I never liked that. I pushed back when Jason brought it up. No. You find a way to build a Performance Center without stretching your fans to a breaking point by making the experience less enjoyable and more watered down. There are other ways to create a feeder system than that.
Well, I think for Vince, with that as the official argument, or at least the logic behind it, at this point, especially given all the releases, my counter would be instead of the selling the jet, I would say keep the jet, but pay for everyone's transportation and give them a per diem and pay for their hotel like any other Screen Actors Guild actor would get. And many years paying them less than 13% of your profit, you can afford to pay them back a little bit.
Well, right, that plays into my argument, which is you don't need a third hour of Raw to pay for a Performance Center.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fair. I think at the time that was the argument, just because of the outlay of money they made at the time. Because remember, but again, with accounting, they took that quote unquote loss and still kept it moving. So
yeah.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. All right, let's keep rolling through calls. Thanks, Jake, for the call. Up next is Nick in Brattleboro, Vermont. Good to hear from you, Nick. What'd you think of Raw tonight?
Good evening, and Rich, always a pleasure to talk to you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Ditto. Too long, too many rematches, you know. One thing, and I hope you get someone who is in the auditorium or the state, whatever it was, to call you, because to me, the reactions for Chicago was very muted, except for the very end with Charlotte. I I felt the audience, and I was watching, you know, when you hear a cheer, were people's mouths moving and such, mm-hmm. and it just seemed very muted, even for Goldberg. I mean, the Goldberg chant petered out, and it just, I'm just so curious as to what the mood was in there.
I thought the Goldberg chants were, we know they can pipe them in. That's been something that even WCW did, and it felt piped in. I didn't feel there was an organic Goldberg chant. I think there are people who, when they hear Goldberg chant, oh, this sounds fun, let me join in. I didn't sense any sort of genuine wave of enthusiasm for Goldberg. I hope I'm not projecting, just because I haven't been a big fan of Goldberg, you know, even going back to the beginning. When I say fan of, I guess, I mean, I appreciate the things that he did well, but well, that's a whole other topic. that I won't get into. I've done lots on it, but I don't like that kind of character. You know, the guy who comes in and just blows past everybody, even if we take away the behind the scenes issues with him not really fully appreciating it and attitude issues and, you know, WCW's dying to, if he had a lot of bad influences and all that. And I don't blame him for taking the money when WWE offers it. I don't feel sorry for him looking 54. You know, there's a reason people aren't professional athletes at age 54. And if you're going to take the money, then you're going to, there's a chance you're going to look bad and get hurt. And that's the choice he made for a lot of money. But I think fans sort of look at him and go, yeah, okay, really? Still? Like, this is the state WWE's at where you're not doing a Hall of Fame speech or in a mixed tag match in the, you know, mid card, but you're actually like main eventing against Lashley and you want us to care. That's what I thought Chicago was saying. I'm surprised there weren't more and louder sustained CM Punk chants that came through on TV, Rich.
I'm not, because given what happened at during the Drew McIntyre match, I'm sure some of it got muted. And for anyone as an apologist that ever wanted to say that the WWE do not sweeten their sound, that it will be Exhibit A for the rest of my life until the day I die. That Drew McIntyre entrance where you hear the fans screaming and then you hear Michael Cole say 16 time chant and then cut out. Like that's it.
Yeah. Yes.
There's like Michael Cole was not in the building, folks. Like they just hit play on the wrong WWE network file and they were hoping that would be enough cheers. And it was apparently a scene, either Cena, like with 16 times, like either Cena or Flair. And it would be quite ironic on the day he was let go, it was Flair. So I'm going to assume it was Cena. And it's the issue, I think, with Goldberg and the fans in general tonight is something that, again, going back to even Jay's commentary, they inadvertently, despite having the sellout and doing so well, have now set a very low bar for AEW to clear for the rest of the month when they reside at Chicago for five shows.
Yep. That is true. Trying to think what else remarkable. This is why I am genuinely bummed out. Nobody from Chicago volunteered to be our on-site correspondent. So guilt trip, everybody. Because I'd love to be talking about what it's like in that building tonight instead of just having the TV perspective. The crowd seemed enthusiastic, maybe more so for Nikki Cross than I expected. They were, I thought, forgiving of Drew McIntyre. You know, when he went back on offense. I do, and I was looking at the crowd instead of just listening to the crowd because I don't trust the audio, especially going into Chicago when WWE is going to be prepared, you know, for the worst.
Yeah.
And just looking at the crowd in the body language, you know, I think they don't, there's no animosity towards Drew. There's animosity, and, you know, obviously like Miz, you know, there's animosity towards, you know, the Miz and Morrison doing their shtick.
Right.
And it just being overbearing and the fans starting a CM Punk chant. And Priest just sort of laughed, I think, almost like, yeah, I knew this was going to happen. I told people it was going to happen. Look, it's happening. That's what that facial expression told me. But I don't think people have animosity towards Priest. I think it's gotten to the point where fans have a kind of a sympathy for the wrestlers who have to go out there and perform under the conditions that they're often put in by Vince McMahon with repetitious matches and the overscripting of promos and then just some of the juvenile stuff like Miz and Morrison that I think backfired a bit tonight.
Yeah, they threw the CM Punk chant out. They threw, what was the other one I really liked? The We Want Wyatt that came out early. And that one, it kind of died after a while, and it's like, well, when he was there, you didn't chant "We want Wyatt." So come
I
on,
think absent the absence makes the heart grow fonder with Wyatt, because I challenge anyone. Javier can step up on this one later, but like, what is it, a high or low percentage of the time that a Bray Wyatt or Fiend match let you down despite being excited because of the hype? You know, if you're someone who liked his, you know, community theater promos full of gibberish that sounded fun, but you can't deconstruct it into anything meaningful most of the time, or the Fiend stuff, even if you liked it, and there are things to like about it at times, for sure. But when the bell rang, you know, I mean, when Bray Wyatt went out there at TLC, I was in the building for that a couple years back, and against Miz, I was just like, oh, this is just not working at all. And so, you know, like, it just, the match just isn't good. And that just happened a ton. You know what I mean? It's just, so I don't know that when people are saying they want him, I'm not quite sure what they want.
The Fiend lore. They want the Fiend lore, Wade.
You got to deliver. And I was there for Bray Wyatt and Miz, and it wasn't good. And there's so many other times his matches haven't been good. And Randy match wasn't good. So I don't know. That my point is that they want him, but do they really? Is it a rosier version of him that doesn't connect with reality?
Yeah, it's one of those rom-com things. It's like, are you in love with this person or the idea of the person?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
It is definitely the idea in this case. And there was another, you know, you mentioned Nikki A.S.H., but I thought that they, when she first showed up, they booed her. There were some boos in the crowd when they did the when she did the chair, and then even during the match when Charlotte put her through the table. I'm sorry, when Charlotte put her through the announce table, and when Charlotte charged her speared her better than Goldberg through the barricade, the fans lost their minds and they were pro Charlotte to the point where after she did the table spot with the powerbomb, they missed it, so USA didn't have to like go to black or cut away, but she was cussing a blue streak. You could hear the MF-er, like the end of it, as she was like dropping it as she turned around and spiked her. And she was in another planet. Now, she also kind of stepped in it when she gave that god-awful promo about Simone Biles. And then
stick with me. I've got a point. If you have to tell someone in the middle of a promo, stick with me. I've got a point. You're coming. You're in trouble.
Yeah, like, but she did that part. She kind of had to stumble through, and that's another one of those, you know, there's been this eternal history of Charlotte on the main roster being given promos that are hilariously, painfully, just clear as day, something that someone else wrote just to see if they could get her to say it. And then when she says it out loud, they know she'll say it was her idea all the time because she's a company woman. But when it came to the Becky Lynch stuff and those chants, she shut him down quick. She was a pro when it came to controlling that crowd outside of the scripted stuff, which, you know, to be illustrated even more, much like the Sweet and Sound, you can tell when it's someone versus the company either speaking through their bodies or them speaking themselves or, you know, literally the fans.
Yeah. All right, we'll go back to Nick here. Appreciate you waiting. Anything else you want to follow up on or ask?
Oh yeah. I did take a quick look. Rhea had that R last week also, so I don't know whether it's a new tat or it's just makeup.
I'm hoping for her to think it's makeup, because that's a lot of dedication to a gimmick.
Well, have you seen the rest of her body? She's got tats all over the place. A lot of little stuff tonight. First of all, if you have an ancient family sword that's been in your family for years, it's not called Angela. It's called Stormbringer or, you know, Wrath of Conan, or, you know, just go watch Game of Thrones and see what the names of the swords were. You know, Wolfsbane. It's not Angela. It was just like, oh please. And then just on Goldberg a little bit more, is he totally seemed to have like lost his place, and he like walked away, and then he came back and started up again. And then my favorite of all is here Charlotte has been rammed through a table gotten the twisting neck breaker and is supposedly out cold, and the camera focuses on her when she lifts her head up, adjusts her top to make sure that she's not falling out, and then puts her head back down and closes her eyes again. It's like, Mr. Director, what are you doing? Or, Mr. Cameraman, why are you focusing on this? When she's supposed to be out.
And also, if you're Charlotte, don't do that. Like, you know, you can figure that out without that moment where if you're on camera, it's just super embarrassing. Like, figure out how to do that in a way that's a little more subtle.
Yeah, I was kind of like, oh, she's okay. She's going to get up now and kick the tar out of, but she just put her head back down and was out cold again. It was very, very amusing to me.
Yeah.
I got to hit Jimmy Smith on one thing. It was an enziguri, and he called it a drop kick. And it's just, I know that's your pet peeve. Learn the business you're broadcasting. I can't tell you how many great sports calls I've been a part of. In 1980, Do You Believe in Miracles, Al Michaels, wide right, when the Giants beat Buffalo, and John Madden, even as bad as he could be sometimes, he knew what he was talking about. And Howard Cosell would go off on tangents that you wouldn't believe, saying words you couldn't understand, but it was like he knew boxing, and you knew that he knew Muhammad Ali, and Smith is giving me heart attacks.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Smith, you've got to be working tirelessly, like, throughout the week. And I said this about Ann Burk too. You want to have evidence that there's an awareness of that you were hired for a reason other than your competence and knowledge about the product, and that people who have been watching this for a very long time know a lot more than you do, and you need to catch up. It means no more nights out with the boys, no more, binging Netflix. You got to cut back on some of these other things and just get up to speed. And you can't become Excalibur overnight, but you got to show some signs that you're watching enough wrestling to understand the basics and paying attention enough to catch them. Rich, how is Jimmy Smith doing for you on that front? And it's not personal about Jimmy. It might sound like it sometimes. I think he's being produced terribly. I think who was on NXT predating Byron Saxton and this current crew? He was a wrestler, and then he shifted to commentary, Rich?
Oh, you're thinking of... God bless. Oh, I just completely forgot his actual name.
Barrett?
He always liked to hit
Percy
Watson.
Yeah, and he did the same thing. He would talk like he was trying to lift a truck. Everything he said, it was like, I'm straining to lift up truck from a bumper. And it's like, stop it. Don't do that. So, and that was NXT. I mean, I don't know what it is. A lot of this is how they're produced. But, if you have the pipes, be an announcer. If you don't, you can be an announcer, but don't try to fake it by doing this all the time and then yelling. Like, Jimmy Smith sounds like he's running a wet T-shirt contest at some, dive bar sometimes. We're just yelling at you, tip your waitress, and let's get going, look at her. It's just like, settle down and talk to us like you respect us, so then we can respect you. And he just isn't doing that. And it's driving me nuts, but he was put in a spot he wasn't ready for. And so there comes a point where you blame management, but then after a month, you start going, we better see improvement. So how is Jimmy doing for you in terms of that, Rich?
Well, first, I thought you were talking about, because it was apparent in his dialogue as well, Nigel McGuinness, because Nigel also had that thing. But again, it comes back to the first issue is they're being produced that way. So that means Michael Cole is training them that way, or at least Vince McMahon is training Michael Cole to train them that way.
Or Vince is in his ear going, come on, get more intense. And if you don't have the pipes to get more intense through your vocal cords, through a diaphragm, then if you don't have those pipes or you just don't know how to react, then you start doing this to make up for it. And that's not pleasant to listen to for 3 hours.
Right, because if you're listening to old tapes and you hear, say, JR doing something like that, he has the combination of both great pipes and also his southern accent. And so it adds that extra, not twang in terms of his accent, but it gives that his natural baritone, that that extra, it's carrying it, that extra, as his excitement. Even when he was younger, it was a little hairy, but it was still, it wasn't fake. And I think that's actually what it is. It's authenticity. He is not legitimate. Look at the difference between him and what's going on with McAfee on Friday. McAfee, when he gets excited, is legitimately, you can tell the guy's excited. When they had that one match and you could see him jumping up and down while he's commentating, it isn't him doing that because he's been directed it. It's him just being himself. And I don't think some people, like, I'm a naturally introverted person, but if I'm excited about something, I'll get into it. I think adding the fact that you're on TV, I think Jimmy isn't projecting. I feel like I'm an episode of Seinfeld. Jimmy's not projecting. It goes back to what you said at the beginning, training camp. He needed to go to a boot camp or some sort of area where they could get him prepped instead of just bringing him in cold, just like they did with Adnan Virk, and setting him up for failure, because there isn't going to be that curve when you're, especially if you're not an experienced hand in doing this commentary style. You're doing it for 3 hours is the god-awful thing you can do. And then you have two people, Corey Graves, who's never going to help you, and Byron Saxton, who can't help himself. And so that's a recipe. That whole announce team is a recipe for disaster. And then Cole and McAfee talking like two grown human beings like each other and don't mind being in each other's company is fine. I think the excited, weird kids at the table dynamic of the NXT crew works for me, between the three of them, but this is just a train wreck, and it's going to remain that as long as they lean into Corey Graves' darkest tendencies in terms of picking on Saxton. Saxton never, at this point, being beaten down to the point where he doesn't fight back. At least he fought back a couple of years ago. Now it's just like, it's not even fair, and Virk was just a ficus, and now you have Jimmy Smith, and going back to your original question, long answer for a short question, I think he's struggling, and I think it isn't as bad as Adnan, but it's still pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Nick, anything else you want to wrap up with before we
last point, and then I'll hang up and let you talk. Where do you think this is going with Keith Lee, if anywhere? It seemed a very weird thing. You know, it's, why bring him back and have him win? You know, I know 50-50 booking, but I'm just curious to get both of your guys' input on where do you think this is going?
Rich, what do you think? And talk about the Keith Lee journey the last few weeks. I mean, they tried to cover for him a little bit, you know, when they said, you know, oh, he came back and faced Lashley and then Cross, and now he gets a win, but it's like it's a much more densely packed and vital situation for Lee than it is for Ripley. It's like they've defined him down and reduced him so much. And then you have the whole Cross situation too, which is not Nick's question, but you can't win with Karrion Kross against Keith Lee right now, because one of the two is going to be prematurely defined down.
Yeah, it's so frustrating to think about, because it gets back to one of those fundamental WWE issues. When he was in Texas, he was in a match, and he lost in his hometown, or as close to his hometown as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And then you give him this match in Chicago, and he wins. And people don't know how to react, because they saw him lose in one of the most important matches you sold us on television in his career up until this point on the main roster. And so you don't know how you feel about Keith. And Keith, you know, he's been on Twitter saying, one day I'm going to tell my story in a few weeks, give me some time. So clearly there is this disconnect from what is being shown on television to who the man is. And it was, like I said, it was even more pronounced when he won tonight. And he is just breaking down in the ring in terms of tears after a win, where it's just, to everyone else in the world, it's another 50-50 situation. But to him, that was everything. That win today was everything. Tonight was everything for him. And it's also similar to what happened tonight with Mustafa Ali, who had been spent the majority of last week talking about how he can't wait to be back in his hometown to wrestle, and they have him lose, and that's their MO. It's your hometown, it's your birthday, it's anything that's significant to you, you're going to lose, face or heel, doesn't matter. And that just that stuff wears, just like treating your veterans, wears on those people and wears on you as a fan, as a viewer. Why do I need to care if this is their hometown? Why do I need to care if this is this special day or he's dedicating this match to this person? Because he's not going to win. That's not what happens. And it creates this narrative, this weird sub-narrative that we've talked about for years within the WWE, which eventually gets back to Keith, of the good guys really are idiots. Why are you even considering being the good guy? You should really be a bad guy. And that's just Keith Lee is the biggest example of that right now.
All right, Nick, any closing words?
Nope, that's it. Have a good night.
Cool. Thanks. Yep, you too. Appreciate it.
Bye, Nick.
All right, we'll go next to Greg in Kansas City. Greg, thanks for calling. What do you think of Raw tonight?
Hey, guys, thank you. Thank you, Rich. Nice talk with you for the first time. And I'll go through a few quick thoughts, and then I have basically a question for you guys. But as far as my thoughts, I'll circle back to a couple things that were mentioned. I agree with the need for 3 hours. I mean, like, you know, that's the way something people have felt for a long time. And I understand that not every segment is going to be like this hot segment. But, I mean, 2.5 hours into a show, I don't think anybody's like yearning to watch Reggie versus Akira Tozawa. So anyway, that was one point. And then on top of that, I mean, it was, I don't know. I don't think the show was as bad. I don't know. It wasn't say this was a bad show. I mean, there were a few positive points. I thought outside of the legitimate points that were raised about like the material Charlotte was given, I thought she did excellent, like in terms of like her composure and just looking like a star. And I feel like minus the material she's given, I feel like she is just night and day in terms of like her actual delivery in terms of promos. And she looks like a bona fide superstar out there. And I'll say Charlotte is fortunate in a lot of ways. She might be fortunate she's untouchable in terms of like WWE standards, considering Andrade and now Ric Flair apparently out of the company. So it's like, it's a good thing Charlotte's got the status that she has, because I don't think she'll ever be like be pushed or anything like that. So I think she's too established for that. So that's a positive for her. And then moving on from there, I liked the Charlotte Nikki match. I liked actually seeing a quote unquote hardcore match. Didn't seem to have to resort to unnecessary levels of violence to get the point across. I mean, I don't understand why the match happened. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, the stupid stipulation with the championship contenders match. I don't understand that. I'm still not sold on, like, Nikki, like, being anything other than, like, a short-term attraction as champion, although I think this was a better week for her than last week. But I liked the match. I thought the match was match itself was good. And I liked the presentation of Ripley this week. I thought that she looked really good. And then on to some of the not-so-positive things. I thought Randy Orton would be back. I'm surprised he wasn't. I thought he would be back and get the big pop in Chicago to save Riddle. I mean, I guess he's still coming, but not this week. And then the, you know, Ali losing in his hometown. That's pointless. It's just there's no reason for that or rhyme for that whatsoever. And I will say this, Wade. I've expressed some sentiments via email that you haven't quite agreed with about the state of the AEW women's division. But I will say this, if AEW is going to feature its women's division more, hopefully it's better stories than Alexa Bliss and Eva Marie and Doudrop. So I will say that. But I'll let you guys follow up on that, and then I'll ask you guys a question.
Sure. Yeah, Rich, anything you want to respond to there?
I agree with the Charlotte points, especially because I think she did a great job. Like I said, horrible material at the beginning with the small bowel stuff, but she turned it around. I like the fact that she pointed out that it's theft, that she is the most targeted money in the bank. Like, that's the stuff you should focus on instead of small bowel. Talk about the fact that, you know, I'm such a good champion that these people have to try to steal it from my moments of weakness, which has been the conceit of Money in the Bank, regardless of face or heel winning it. It's you are finding a weak point in a champion and trying to steal the title. You're not actually – most people don't call their shot like Cena did. Cena has and Robin Damme and a couple other folks in terms of saying, hey, I'm going to meet you on a match, and then we're going to fight using this briefcase. And then to your point on Doudrop, my partner in crime over on the East, Brian, loves Piper Niven / Viper. And to see her go from this hard monster woman this female Vader-esque character in Japan now into this is just, it boggles the mind. And then to see her in a feud with a doll, I, you know, just put my hands in the air and I walk in the woods.
All right. Drake, you said you got more for us.
Yeah, and then I'll make one more point. That's one more point I was remembering was the conversation about the commentary prior to this. And I will say, like, the particularly the dynamic with Graves and Sax. And I will argue Graves can still be a good, quote-unquote, heel commentator when, you know, the material's right at certain times. I mean, that commentary, for example, during, like, the Miz Morrison entrance, it was just so god-awful. And it was just – I mean, it's not a good pairing at all. I mean, I don't listen to the commentary for the full show, but, like, when I do, it's like it's not a good pairing at all. And it's just the way, I guess, guys like Saxton are instructed to be on commentary. I mean, it's just not good at all. And then my question is that we have been wondering, you know, there was a conversation a couple weeks ago about Lee and why Lee is maybe perhaps reasons why Lee is booked the way that he is, which goes outside of just simply like WWE's dropping the ball with him. I mean, we've talked about like some of the potential issues that are out there about him that may or may not be hearsay, but are out there. And so I'm wondering, because the Lee Cross thing is really mind-boggling, especially head-scratching, especially with Cross main eventing the NXT TakeOver show against Samoa Joe, who has been an established star on the main roster for several years. So my question, I guess, would be is why is this happening? Because everybody likes to say, like, everyone comes up from NXT and is ruined. And I don't think it's quite that simple because, like, you know, why are Cross and Lee getting this treatment yet? Damian Priest, I think so far it's been very, I would say, arguably, I mean, it could be better, but I would say arguably it's been, he's been treated pretty well so far. Same goes for Rhea Ripley. So why guys like Cross and Lee, whereas then, you know, the opposite or maybe closer to the opposite, although there's been a lot of issues with Ripley's character. I mean, she has been, you know, you could tell she's in a pretty good spot as far as WWE goes. So why these guys, but not like a Ripley and a Priest? I guess I'll let you guys discuss that.
Yeah, Rich, your take on that too to start.
I think in the case of Priest, one of the easiest things for him was he has the size. He's pretty good, you know, Punishment Martinez prior to becoming Damian Priest had pretty much been a solid wrestler. They made some refinements in NXT, but when he managed the main roster, the best thing that happened to him was he kind of was in the background. He did the things every now and again. He hasn't really been pushed to being like a high level guy, but working with Bad Bunny and being one of the wrestlers that leaned into Bad Bunny like the heels did completely was very helpful for him. And that gave him a lot of opportunities. In terms of Cross and Lee and some of the other, you mentioned Rhea. Yeah, being put with Charlotte isn't a punishment by any stretch of the imagination in either feud she had with Charlotte, whether it was a few years ago or now. And you're right, she has been posited. I think it's that, like I said earlier, the Lita effect and just her size. And yeah, I think you're right. But then when you look at some of the other folks, Keith Lee, Karrion Kross, I think they like him. And I believe that there is that wait and see kind of pushback that a lot of WWE folks have had when pushed on Karrion Kross. And I don't see it in WWE because if you get a chance, if you ever look at anything that Killer Kross did in that interstitial period between Impact, his time in Impact and his time in WWE, he wrestled somewhere between 10 to 15 minute matches. They're all like hoss fight sprints, and his style has now been turned into a slower WWE Triple H style plod. And I think that takes a lot away from it. And then Wade always has fun mentioning the promo style that Mr. Cross has that doesn't exactly help him. And now they've taken Scarlett away. I almost say Charlotte, forgive me. They've taken Scarlett away, and so now you lose the dynamic of him and his partner where she doesn't have to do the weird Mad Max lip sync. But having her was a pretty good part of the act that doesn't disappear when he's in NXT. Again, is another one of those, in NXT one thing happens, on the main roster another. So that's where I'm at. Those guys with Keith, I can't, you know, confirm or deny any of those stories or rumors that abound about Keith. I just know that whenever he does tell his story, I hope it's something
that lives up to the suspense that folks have created around him saying he's going to tell a story, if that makes sense.
As far as Scarlett goes, I don't think Scarlett is very high on the list of things that are going to keep Vince McMahon from having confidence in Karrion Kross being a breakout star. That said, I don't think Vince McMahon can be picky right now, and I am just puzzled by – I mean, Keith Lee and Karrion Kross should be on separate tracks on the main roster. They're both new to Raw, basically. Keith Lee gone for months and months this year, and Kross making his debut. They should be on separate tracks. They should be plowing through bad talent, you know, like green wrestlers, young wrestlers – wrestlers, mid-carders forever, 24/7 people, and there should be this anticipation built up for them finally fighting once you figure out how the, you know, which one the fans are into and you cast them as a babyface and which one fans would rather boo. Figure that out, and then it should be 6, 9, 12 months from now that they actually face each other for the first time. I don't get how he can imagine trading wins isn't doing anything but defining them both down in a huge way. And I get that he looks at Keith Lee and he's got his issues with Keith Lee. I've talked to people behind the scenes and they've got issues with Keith Lee. And they go, yeah, Keith's the guy who does all the things. If you want to not earn Vince's trust, look at the list of things Keith Lee does. And Karrion Kross has a similar list of similar and sometimes different items that boxes he checks that causes Vince to lose faith in him. But Tony Khan has those lists too. And there's people who don't live up to every ideal. But Tony Khan and Paul Heyman would do this too. You work with who you have and you make the best that you can out of them. And Vince's attitude is, if you check certain boxes that irritate me, I'm going to bury you and embarrass you and destroy you. And it is you can afford to take that approach in a monopolistic environment. He is not existing in one right now. And that's why he has a chance to get eaten up. And he's going to be left without valuable wrestlers like Keith Lee and Karrion Kross, with or without Scarlett. Kross should be able to get over. So it's just... Vince is in his own head in terms of, well, X, Y, Z, so I don't want to push this guy. I'm going to teach him a lesson and embarrass him on TV. And it's like, nah, you know what? It's time to start serving your fans and your stockholders and your networks who paid big money and get over your issues, you know, with people or look past them while you try to make money instead.
I think for Vince also, and the reason I brought up Scarlett, because that's been his cheat. That's been the heuristic he's always used. If you have the pretty blonde valet, I'm going to push you to a point and then I'm going to separate you from her and I'm going to push her. And he just skipped it. I was very surprised. That's what surprised me more about Scarlett not being there. It was just that this is such a lazy trope he always does. And for once he's not doing it. And it's not for the betterment of the wrestler. It's for, I just don't like this guy. And I look at that and I'm like, well, why did you just let your son-in-law feed your entire developmental roster to him? If you're going to do that only for him to come up here and look like a schmuck, that makes no sense at all. Like, why do those guys feel where they've been bumping for this guy? Like he's 96, 97, 98 Taz. And now he's going to come back there and you're just looking at him and you have, we didn't talk about this last week. You have Bronson Reed losing to Adam Cole. And he's like, well, at least I would have beaten Jeff Hardy on Twitter. And it's just like, I mean, nobody respects the guy. That doesn't help anyone. And it doesn't have to be a fear thing. But if they're saying stuff like that, it's like you mentioned the McMahon example of the kids being brought out to the water fountain or to the you know, auditorium for, you know, show and tell or whatever. This is where the kids realize that the substitute teacher can't really punish them.
Yep, you got it. All right, Greg, any closing words from you?
Yeah, one more thought is that taking AEW out of the equation for a second. I mean, everybody talks about, like, you know, there is a gulf, I would say, in a lot of ways between AEW programming and WWE programming. Taking AEW aside, there's a major difference between the two WWE flagship shows, Raw and SmackDown. And on the post show on Friday, discussed how the top SummerSlam matches, like, say what you want about the booking, say what you want about, you know, part-timer law, I brought that up before, but like those top three SmackDown SummerSlam matches actually feel like a big deal between Reigns, Cena, Edge, Seth Rollins, and Belair and Sasha Banks, whereas like the Raw, it just feels like there's just nothing, next to nothing happening on this show. I mean, like, you know, Lashley Goldberg is not exciting in my opinion. This women's three-way match, I mean, bless her heart, but it kind of feels like a bit of like a fluke match with not a serious match with Nikki being thrown in there. And, you know, McIntyre and Jinder Mahal, I mean, that's supposed to excite people. I'm guessing that's going to be a match. And then maybe this tag team title match could be good with Styles and Owens, I'm guessing, versus Orton and Riddle. But there's a gulf right there. I mean, SmackDown's far from a perfect
yep.
show, but, like,
yep.
the big matches and the big feuds on the show feel like they mean something. That's not the case at all. I'm wrong. And that's it for me. I'm that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks. Appreciate it. Anything you want to react to there, Rich, or –
I will say ditto to all that because he hit the nail on the head. You look at the Raw matches, you compare them to the SmackDown at SummerSlam, and while SmackDown still suffers from the same repetitiveness, it's clear those matches have a lot more import than the Raw ones. And
yeah.
Raw has 3 hours a week to try to make that case, and they don't do it.
Yep. All right. We'll go next to Deke in Michigan. Deke, what's Nick Ross tonight?
Hey, what's happening, guys? You know, just another, more of the same, everything you guys have said so far. I didn't catch the whole show. I jumped in when you guys were talking about the announcing, and I want to get to that. But on top of what
yeah.
you just mentioned with Karrion Kross, I am not an NXT guy. I don't watch NXT. And I find it hilarious. Keith Lee being a great example. They brought this guy up. And they just expect you to know who he is, you know. They completely expect you to know his story and just like, oh, here he is, cheer for him. And I'm like, I don't know who this guy is. And they've done that, my gosh, with so many people through the years. And Karrion Kross thing is hilarious because it's kind of the exact opposite. Like you guys just said, he's on one show. He's the champion. He's got this elaborate entrance. He's got this girl. He has all this stuff. But now they expect us not to know that, because they bring him out here and he's completely different. It's just
yeah.
kind of odd the way that makes no sense to me. I mean, even Bayley, look what they did to her when they brought her up. I didn't know who she was. I'd heard of her. I knew she was popular, but they told her story in NXT. They didn't tell it on the main roster. So I was just lost. I'm like, why should I cheer for this girl? Why should I care about this girl? And anyway, it's just kind of the exact opposite now with Kross, which is interesting. But for the announcing, guys, did you – forgive me if it was mentioned, because I came in right in the middle of you guys talking about it. Of all the things Jimmy Smith does, have you guys noticed it doesn't matter if it's a punch, a kick out, someone going through a table, no matter what it is, he just keeps going, oh, no matter what it is. And it's like 20 times a match at least. And I have to mute it. I don't hear anything else, but no, I'm telling you, the smallest move, the biggest move. And that's all he says the whole time. It's really, really bad. And I don't know if anybody has mentioned that this week or last week or any other time, but now that I say it, if you didn't notice it, you're never going to unnotice it now. You're not going to be able to not hear it. It's incredible. And that's all I got, guys.
All right, Deke, appreciate it. Yeah. No, I mean, Jimmy Smith's not good. I mean, he's not. He doesn't add to the show. I'm repeating myself, but, I mean, the utterances, the lack of artful use of language. His vocabulary is like fourth grade level, a smart fourth grader, but like there's nothing that surprises you. Like where you're like, whoa, that was a really like he added through descriptive artful language to my enjoyment of the scene. It is just utterances. He stopped saying things that aren't things, like that were just bullshit. Like, you know, oh, Charlotte, what a veteran move when she was just standing on her opponent's throat, holding the ropes. Like, that's not really a veteran move. It's just a thing wrestlers do. It doesn't have anything to do with being a veteran. You just say things because you think it sounded smart and he's filling time, but it showed a contempt for the audience or a disregard, at least, for the fact that he was in over his head. And so he decided he could fake it and make stuff up. And he's better about that now. Like, so it sounds like I'm being mean to him, and I am in a way, but he's getting a lot of money for being hired for a job he wasn't ready for. And it's not our job to baby him. He's a grown-up, and he's getting paid, a good salary, I'm sure. So it's just time to get better, and he's getting better, but I don't know that he can get better fast enough, and I'm not sure that this is his thing. And Deke brings up some specifics about why. I don't think he's a natural, and I don't see him – he's improving, but I don't see him improving fast enough, and I don't know that he has – you know, the verbal skills to ever add to a wrestling match, unfortunately. He seems like a nice enough guy. You know, if you met him, he's probably a cool guy to hang out with. But I don't think he's made for this. Rich, not to pile on.
You opened Wade with, I don't want to be mean to the guy, and then said he sounds like a fourth grader. So I didn't know where to go from there.
Fourth graders have a vocabulary that's functional. Like, you can write a good story. You know, like a good, you know, that's when they start writing short stories. And there's, you know, you can function in society with a fourth grade vocabulary, but that's all he displays, you know, verbally. I mean, there isn't an artful use of language at all. And if you're going to talk for a living, whatever it is, you know, if it's talk radio or podcasting or broadcasting in any way, I mean, read a lot, write a lot, and bring some words that are precise and descriptive and that the average viewer wouldn't have come up with who's in fourth grade. And he's not. So, and there's a lot of people out there who are good at it, who could be good at it. There's a lot of smart wrestling fans who have a larger vocabulary, who would display that in describing moves and emotions and attitudes of what they're watching.
I think with him to that point, I'm trying to think of the right words because you just put a flamethrower to it. I'm not trying to put a baseball bat to the action.
I like fourth graders.
Some of my best friends are fourth graders.
I had one of my health for a whole year recently, and I could communicate with him well, but I wouldn't put him on national television at that grade level to describe wrestling matches and complex personalities and situations. And he doesn't – if you wrote down all the words he said, Rich, it's not – there's not a word there a fourth grader wouldn't know. You know, and I'm not saying, you know, he has to impress people with, like, you know, fake thesaurus lookup like Vince would do. It doesn't come naturally to him. You know, there aren't descriptive words that come naturally to him, and it really stands out. Like, more – Corey Graves is good. He has a big vocabulary. He's a smart guy. Over on NXT, the whole crew, Beth Phoenix, like, they use good words, Rich. There's just not good words coming out of Jimmy.
I think some of it also is between Burke and now Jimmy. In the case of the idea of finding an ex after your ex, finding someone that's the exact opposite, or finding a coach and getting someone that, you know, to go for the disciplinarian after the player's coach.
Yeah.
This is also a direct result of avoiding the over loquacious, over descriptive, over you look back and, you know, they're like,
are you talking about Tom Phillips, the robot announcer?
Well, I mean, before he was a robot, I don't know if you knew, but yeah, he was quite the loquacious Larry. He just was this chatterbox. He couldn't do it. You know, I think
friend Morrow.
They're like, this is the anti-moral defense force. Yeah. They wanted to make sure they do not have this person who's going to go rogue and start talking about Drake or making analogies to pop culture to the point where people were throwing up in the streets. You know, they wanted to avoid that.
Yeah.
And they've gone so far.
I don't think they wanted to avoid it. Rich, I'm going to interject it. I think what they wanted is a guy who was available to hire, who wasn't a pro wrestling guy with credentials outside of pro wrestling. I mean, I know that's what it was. I mean, that's literally the order Nick Khan gave. You know, it was, we want somebody who will impress network executives with his resume outside of pro wrestling. And it's to placate the people at NBC Universal who don't know anything about pro wrestling and they don't watch the show and they don't have a stake in it being good, but they'll be impressed that you got some guy with MMA credentials or you got a guy from MLB Network on ESPN. The Adnan Virk, followed by Jimmy Smith, wasn't a reaction to, let's find somebody who can dumb down the show for us because Morrow drove us nuts with his show-off language. It is just a guy with a non-pro wrestling resume that would impress network executives. And that's why I'm hostile towards both hires. And I am, because I'm sick of Vince McMahon and Nick Khan not putting us first as viewers, but catering to people who don't watch the show and whose opinions don't matter, because what they care about is delivering ratings. They're delivering viewership so they can sell ads. So stop giving them this fluff, this nonsense. Well, he worked for ESPN, MLB Network, or he worked for MMA. It's like, no, just give us a good wrestling announcer who makes the shows better. And they're not doing that. And that's why, you know, it's a theme of the show. That's why I don't have sympathy for Goldberg. Like, he's getting paid a lot of money to be bad at what he does, or one-dimensional or paper thin and just be a, a legend who's brittle and repetitive and loses his train of thought. And that's what you get. That's him. But I'm not going to praise it or make excuses.
You're seeing red wave. You're seeing so much red wave, you're not seeing the road. See, what I'm saying with Morrow is he fits everything you're talking about, but he also has the key thing they don't necessarily want. He likes pro wrestling.
Yes, yes.
Like if you said you have a Showtime announcer that's critically acclaimed for covering the biggest boxing and MMA fights in the history of the modern sport that can bring an energy to anything he does,
yeah,
you're gonna NBC Universal is going to do triple flips. And then you say, oh, also, he's pretty good at doing pro wrestling as evidenced by this work with New Japan and yada, yada, yada. Boom. Nope. They don't want that because, you know, as Daniel Bryan, I love the Bryan Danielson book. They want the caricature of pro wrestling. They don't want people, you know, they lucked out. Right now you have Pat McAfee, who is the same thing. Podcasts, you know, they wanted to get someone that was close enough to Barstool without having all the ickiness of Barstool.
Right.
And
yeah.
And he's that's God bless him. You know, McAfee can get Barstool adjacent some of the commentary he makes, but he never gets into the realm of you're just feeling disgusted. Same as, you know, apologies to anyone who listens, like the Joe Rogan side of things, where it's like, I don't know if I want to have this guy on my show anymore.
And so they
got lucky on SmackDown with him. And that's victory disease. And you start thinking, well, we got this guy. We can do this guy and this guy. Not so much, because they might appreciate pro wrestling. They might think of it as a fun activity or a fun adventure as I try to figure this new job out in my new. But it's going to blow up in your face, because if you don't want to deal with the BS that goes into doing your job before you get to do your job, it's going to kill you before you even get on the red light at the start. Because I'm sure he was there at, like, what, noon? And this is what you get with that. And so that's even scarier. So this isn't like this guy showing up at 7:59. He's like, all right, guys, ready for a good show? This isn't like Jerry Lawler. For those of you who don't know, Jerry Lawler is notorious for being unprepared and having his dad joke cards and all the other stuff. But he wants to be the guy at the bar. Wade's always made allusions that he wants to be the guy at the bar. He's like, there's a football game going on. Which I would think a guy who's such a luminary in pro wrestling would want to provide a little bit. But that's his card to play. That was his card to play. He played it for several decades. And I think as they go forward with NBC Universal, as they go forward with Fox, as they go to the moon, whatever they do, the Vince McMahon, Nick Khan now is just the next in the line of executives that Vince McMahon has found that's younger than him that can kind of see the things the same way he does, which is money first, everything else last.
In slight defense of the Mauro Ranallo relationship with WWE and how WWE handled it, Mauro did have mental health issues, and it made it difficult, you know, for them. And I don't know if Mauro showed up and didn't have those issues, which he's been very open about, and congratulations to him. I think he helped a lot of people doing it. But if that weren't an issue, I think there's a maybe I'm naive, but I think there's a good chance he's still around, and they deal with the fact that he's a big wrestling fan, and they grit their teeth and tolerate the fact that he loves pro wrestling as much as he does, even if they roll their eyes at how big of a fan he is, and they put up with some of the pop culture jokes and try to manage it and finesse it, and the vocabulary going to the other extreme of where you just think the guy's in a thesaurus and all his off days trying to come up with, $100 words or whatever they're called. And so I don't think they got rid of him only because he was a pro wrestling fan. I think it was a difficult situation. Yeah.
And but I think, honestly, I don't want to play devil's advocate on this one, especially because we're trying to cover war wrong. We have our poor listener here. But the one thing I think about when you mentioned that possibility with Mauro, if Mauro perhaps didn't have those issues, I think Mauro also would have been either handled by HR or it would have been – because remember, the thing that kicked it off was the fact that JBL just kept being a dick about things. Yeah. And that is where you're going to have – by the time you get to NBC Universal, if he was – you know, clearly he's not there anymore. But if you're doing the thing where he's on there and they're asking him questions and he has the temerity to bring that up as one of the reasons why, I'm black. I'm glad I'm back in the company. You know? Then it's going to be like, oh, well, why did you guys do – NBC's going to kind of look at them. It's like, why would Greg Gumbel have to worry about Matt Lauer giving him a swirly for not, you know,
doing something the way they want it. That's not how they do things, though Matt Lauer has his own share of issues that he had to handle in terms of magical locked doors and the like, if you want to look at it. But that's a tale for another day. But, yeah, I think they have so many skeletons in that closet. Like, yeah, Morrow has his issues, but his issues were exacerbated by a guy who was allowed to be a predator to his coworkers, which is what JBA, you know, I can't sugarcoat that. Like, he can do all the mountain climbing and, you know, pretend to understand the ails of the brown kids he lives on the island with now, but what you did is what you did, buddy.
The smarmy smile that JBL has when they bring him back on the panel shows is my cue to not watch the pre-show. All right. Fun, spirited discussion. This is an indictment of Raw that we're talking about larger issues and not the specifics. But I shouldn't say that because callers have brought up these larger issues and we're responding to them too. So I think we're trying to serve our callers and listeners in that respect. But let's bring Sam from Nebraska on and see where he wants to steer things. Sam, good to hear from you again.
Sure. I mean, I thought Raw was not very good tonight. I did want to talk about one thing that I actually thought wasn't bad just because it was different, and it was actually hands down the best I'd seen him, was I actually thought the Omos Riddle match granted, you know, he's still pretty limited, but he actually looked like he was a little more confident in the ring with what he was doing. Things looked to be delivered with way more force than usual. Usually he looks so timid. And I thought it did a decent job with what they were trying to do there. And I didn't think, more than anything, which I think is a huge issue with Raw, partially being 3 hours, is that I didn't think it overstayed its welcome. It was nice. It was nice and concise, and it was done quickly. But I was just curious on your thoughts on that.
I'm going to just continue with the theme and say I think Amos is getting better faster than Jimmy Smith is. Rich? I agree.
I think he's fine. I think, we didn't mention it on any of the shows prior. I didn't get a chance with Wade, but with the passing of Super Porky, Sam, I know you and I had talked about it a little bit, and then I think even John a little bit, the idea of borrowing some of Super Porky's moves for a guy this big. And I think he did, not necessarily super, but he did that today. He was more aggressive as a big man and just giving that forward motion of the clothesline, letting Riddle run into it, as opposed to being so timid typically of, like, I'm going to waffle. You know, not everyone wants to be JBL and just fling their tricep at you and try to murder your larynx. And I think he found a happy medium in this match, and he had a good dance partner in Riddle, and it looked good. And to Wade's point, he's getting better. He's taken that. Him and Reggie, I guess, and though Reggie, I do appreciate that Kofi Kingston was the first person to be aghast, that he's like, but you're not really French. And everyone's just kind of like, wait a minute.
I liked is Reggie, and I think it was on Friday, when he goes, please, call me Reginald. Call me Reggie. he was even, like, getting wrong that we want to go less formal. And I got this. I don't know if that was live, but I got the sense it might have been the third take, and they're like, we'll just let this go.
Yeah, it's like it's fine.
This is the best we got. Now pretend to run to the ring right now. Yeah.
Now, Sam, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Rich. Yeah.
It's like double dutch, Sam. You got the calm.
Okay.
I wanted to know what you thought about the.
You know, it wasn't as opposed to being counterproductive, like I think most of the things on Raw were tonight. I felt that was one segment that was actually productive. And then on just like, I've done plenty of live sports presentations before, and the sweetening, and then the whole, like, that was just, I just, because it's just, it's so disrespectful to your audience that you, think they're just that low IQ that you can fool it, but then just you're so careless with it. Why should I start getting in the mindset of like, well, why should I waste my time watching this? They're not even like they're not even taking the time to properly try to fool me. Like, they just think I'll just take whatever. And it's just kind of, you know, I think it's insulting to your audience when you just show that much disregard of care for, like, your work. This is just always a struggle, I think. Other than that, just with some kind of with the Reginald Tozawa match, as a guy who used to see Tozawa in PWG Live, I'm happy he's getting good paydays and not destroying his body. So it is what it is. I just am more like, I can't imagine sitting there. That crowd was just dead watching that thing. So other than that, go VIP, listen to everything with Rich and the deep dive and everything, and have a good night.
Awesome. Thank you. Good to hear from you, Sam, always. We'll move next to Chris calling from Newfoundland. Chris, how you doing? Thanks for holding. What do you think of Rock?
16-time champion. Wow, the crowd really is happy to hear me tonight. How you doing, gentlemen?
Great
to finally get a chance to be on with Rich. It's good. I've been following you on Twitter and hearing your shows since I went VIP, and man, it's good to hear the perspective that you bring, so it's good to be able to talk live with you. Let me start with the main event. How bad is a show in the vaunted Rosemont Horizon, which everyone has talked about how great the sound is in there, when the table got the biggest pop of the night?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, Charlotte, God bless her, she wrote it. She felt that energy and she went with it, but that had to, Nikki had to be like a gut shot that, you know, you're giving your all at the face and they are losing their mind that you just got wrecked.
I mean, the match was good, like, it's given the what they had to work with. I mean, we didn't see any pizza cutters, thank goodness. And we have to overlook the fact that Nikki said she'd never been in a match that dangerous. I guess we're not talking about the match with Asuka in NXT, because NXT doesn't exist in this timeline. But I don't think this Nikki thing is going to work. I mean, we've got the Braun Strowman-esque whooshing noises while she's running around backstage. Can we just never do that again? And, like, she isn't believable as any type of almost anything. She's a plucky, she was great as the chaotic maniac in Sanity, and I loved her in that role, but her promos don't work. There's something about her delivery that doesn't come across as a buyable, if that's a word, a superhero type character. It's just the whole presentation isn't working for me. Do you think that there's any hope for it?
I think Nikki Cross works because I like her. I think she's likable, but I don't think it works at a top level. And I think they just need to move away from her being at a top level. And it also works if she's not one of a dozen juvenile characters on the same show that lacks more mature adult-oriented characters. So I think some of the pushback to Nikki, and again, I thought it seemed like Carrada's more into it than I expected tonight, but you're right, Rich, and earlier, you know, said, but they were also really into Charlotte, and I think they're into stars. I think a Chicago crowd, a lot of those fans are just craving more characters that they relate to, more adult-oriented characters, and AEW gives that to them. And I think pushback against Nikki is sort of what she represents about having too many characters that are childlike and aimed at kids. Rich, your thoughts on Nikki?
Yeah, I think Nikki suffers from the issue of they want her to be Molly Holly, but they do not understand, and I don't think they did when she was there, understand what Molly Holly was, even when she was Mighty Molly. There was the idea of I'm trying to be a superhero, but it was also the understanding of I'm not really a superhero. I just want to be good for people just because I'm a good person. And that's what you saw, you know, when she first won the title, when she cashed it in Money in the Bank, I gave credit to, and as most people did, Impact did, like their social media team or ninjas, they instantly found her gut check promo where she got Al Snow and all the gut check coaches to kind of stand up and pay attention to her as she was explaining, she spent this many years in pro wrestling. If this is her last shot, you're going to give her the time she's earned and is respected and earned and all that good stuff. That's who she is. And you know, you mentioned the great stuff that was going on in NXT, and I think you can fold all that into that character. They tried to do it, but they're shoehorning it, and they're giving her an IQ. You know, they're lowering the character's IQ by 60 points because they think, like you said, wait, the kids will like it. But if you told her or you had her sit down, like, look, I know I'm not a superhero. I'm just out there. I hate the phrase, but I want to put smiles on faces. And while I'm competing against some of the best women on this roster, prove that I earned this. This isn't something I got as a gift. This isn't something my daddy gave me. This isn't something that, you know, I wasn't in a, you know, and kind of show the edge that she has. And then even little things from a production standpoint, when they announce her, they say almost superhero Nikki A.S.H. That's, you again, to Wade's earlier point about four, you're now saying, you know, you don't say Bruce Wayne, Batman, Bruce Wayne. Like, you don't need to overextend, like, they get it. If you're going to, you know, when you have to explain the joke isn't funny. So that's what they're doing with this, and that's what's making her not work. And, you know, even at the end of the night, like I said, she hops the fence. No one's doing the crowd rush celebration, one, because of a pandemic, and two, just because they're not interested. And then she finds a kid that had a Nikki A.S.H. poster, and it goes to the next television show. So they couldn't even take the time to let her get that with all the times they've done overruns to show that there's a person that actually cares and that took the time to make a really nice sign it looked like from what I saw on the floor that the kid was trying to lift up to show her. And that's what it is. It's a half-hearted attempt to highlight her. And so she's not even a 2D character like everybody else. She's like 1.5D. And when you're in Chicago, they're going to eat that a lot.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I just think when you are the world champion, you shouldn't be almost anything. And you definitely shouldn't be coming at things from an angle of, I don't mind if I lose. At least I tried my best. Like, that's a mid-card act. That's a Jobbers and the Stars act. That's not your world champion. And if it is, you're doing something wrong. And, I mean, I understand she won it with the Money in the Bank, but she had to win the Money in the Bank. And now she hasn't really done anything to suggest that she deserves what she's got. So,
but she beat Charlotte tonight. I mean, that's one of the headlines of this show. If we're to get to the micro and not the macro about WWE right now, is yes, it was a no holds barred match, but she like avoided Charlotte charging her. Charlotte went through a table. She landed as raping neck breaker and scored the pin. That's like a meaningful big time victory. That's not I lasted 2 minutes with, or someone else did all the work and I ran in for the pin. I mean, Rich, what is that? Is this a move to try to save Nikki by giving her a meaningful win so fans look at her as a more serious person because she beat Charlotte fair and square?
I think it's a setup for when they have the three-way that she's going to be the ping pong that Charlotte and Rhea throw across the ring for most of the match, and allows her to again get away if they're going to continue this silliness, allow her to roll one of them up. Or allow Charlotte to win and then Becky comes out. Like, she's really put in a bad situation. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago on the East Coast cast, this is not too dissimilar from the way they set up Asuka between Rhea and Charlotte leading up to WrestleMania, where she was the person in the childlike role that really was about to eat the bullet and either get the title to Charlotte or get the title to Rhea. So that way the champion had it and they could do whatever they really wanted. I think she might be good for it. And they don't understand what the threat kept going until he lost the title. And so they're not selling her as the scared person who kind of lucked into it. They're, like Chris just said, they're selling her as, I'm going to try, maybe I do it, maybe I don't, but you're champion, so what does that mean? But we've seen it, because they give so many non-title matches with champions, and we see the champions lose the non-title matches so frequently, it makes the championship that much less important. And so it's really just backwards, weird booking, to be quite honest with you both.
Yeah. Anyway, yep. All right, Chris, back to you.
Yeah, I wanted to go move on to the Goldberg segment. Rich, you touched on it, but I want to read you a quote from Goldberg's promo. Goldberg lives by the spear. You will die by the spear. That's why I am Goldberg. And because I'm Goldberg, you're next. What the heck is that?
That is Goldberg's theory of relativity.
I was waiting for him to start talking about 151 and 2/3% chances. Like, the whole point, the whole promo was a whole bunch of yelling and no substance. There was just nothing to it. The crowd was 100% sweetened because they were booing their head off at one point, and then seconds later there's a full-on, full-blooded Goldberg chant. And I think, and this is probably another macro point for heel Wade to go off on, Vince McMahon's, all of his successes except for Hulk Hogan have been made by listening to crowd reactions and changing course. He did it with Stone Cold. He did it with The Rock twice. He did it with Shawn Michaels. He's done it with Roman Reigns now. But all of a sudden, it seems like instead of listening and adapting, he's listening and going, oh, no, you don't. You'll do what I say, and you'll like it. And if you're not going to cheer for the people I want, I'll make it sound like you are. He's gone from genius fluidity in booking to spoiled child. I want my way, and I'm going to make sure I get it. And it's just not going to work. Nobody wants to see Goldberg in a main event, let alone a main event against Bobby Lashley, who, let's face it, we all want that to be Brock Lashley. That's the match we've been waiting for 15 years.
Yeah. I will say I was at SmackDown in person on Friday, and Vince McMahon, well, if he's sitting in that building, he'd be like, I'm in touch with the fans. I mean, they were reacting the way you would want, the way he would want fans and expect fans to react. He did it all show. Fans did it all show. They totally were into Baron Corbin and the Baron Corbin character. They popped for him coming out. They popped for Cena interacting with him. He was a great foil. They were entertained by him. It wasn't go away heat. They loved Cena and they enjoyed booing Roman Reigns. Even as women swooned for Roman, the audience booed Roman and cheered Cena. I mean, top to bottom, other than a sort of tepid response, I mean, it was cheers, but it wasn't like megastar returning for Sasha Banks, and we'll see how that, but I think that also could have been, we don't trust her, you know what I mean? Bianca Belair clearly didn't trust her based on her reaction when they hugged. So, you know, that I think they're going to boo like crazy, you know, Sasha once she shows up on Friday again. But the thing is Vince can do things right, and that's what makes things maddening, is I don't think it's total luck when things go well, but it is absolutely a spoiled, stubborn version of Vince McMahon that drives other things off the cliff needlessly. If he would, as you say, Chris, just listen to the fans. Rich.
Yeah, I think of Lucas Salt and Charlie in the Chocolate Factory telling her dad that she just wants the factory now, daddy, now. And that's how he feels with these fans. Like, if I don't get what I want, I'm going to eat this thing anyway, and I'm going to turn purple and just blow up and just deal with it. And it's wild to me that you have these two shows and they're both played two separate ways in terms of how he interprets the reactions, because it's not like there's two different sets of WWE fans, Raw fans, SmackDown fans. So he can't make that argument. And so how do you, you know, the cognitive dissonance it takes to ignore one side and placate the other is just insane to me.
Yeah. Chris, any closing words?
Yeah, just a couple of quick points. It's not clear how you feel about Jimmy Smith, Wade, but I think he's auditioning for a Lil Wayne sound-alike contest with his what every 15 seconds. I'm starting to worry that the no wrestling in commercial breaks is back because of that whole ridiculous hat trick of Damian Priest segment that we saw. And again, can we just not with Reggie? Really? Can we just... I'm just done with that. Like, just if he's going to wrestle, let him wrestle. Anyway, great to talk to you, gentlemen, as always. Thanks for taking my call, and enjoy the rest of your night.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. What do you think of Reggie actually defending the title in the ring and having, like, actual wrestling matches and shifting to this? I mean, there's obviously a level of being enamored with what he brings that's different and novel inside the ring. But it's also, and we talked about this on Sunday on the VIP Everything show, there's just something insulting about not being a wrestler and, like, not being humble enough to understand you're a novelty act and you should Like, I don't know. I mean, he won again, you know, so against a wrestler, a talented wrestler. Yeah. And I just, it's part of, I think, Vince McMahon turning away wrestling fans. And that's where Jimmy Smith comes in. Also, it's just like, at some point, you got to look like you're in the wrestling business trying to please wrestling fans instead of whatever. And again, with Reggie, I think it's just more, he's enamored with things that are different. And that's why he likes Amos. And I think it's similar why he likes Reggie. And it's just a little, it's sort of harmless, but it's also sort of not to have a guy who says he would do anything to get to WWE, but he's out there wrestling in an outfit that led the announcers to spend 60% of commentary in a 2-minute match critiquing his wardrobe choices.
Yeah. I think Reggie and Amos, and there's another gentleman in NXT currently, are basically three men. If you look on Instagram, they're all constantly training and doing that work together to kind of disprove the people who have said to them in social media they can't wrestle or they suck. And so I think to answer your point, despite Vince's predilections for why he likes them, they do have respect. And I apologize for not mentioning this Sunday, because I think he is trying to become a wrestler, but you're also working with someone who wants you not to be, which is just it's such a mind. That is insane. And again, it breaks the entire structure of the narrative down, because you're supposed to have a title you defend anywhere, any place, but now it's been structured to you only have matches for it. And that makes no sense to me, because with Reggie, you could set him up to do stunt stuff in the back and set things up where he can do safe, you know, flips and all this, or even just pre-tape it and have the adventures of Reggie back there and you're fine. But instead, they figured out now that he can do that spring perfectly, because that's like one of the easier things he did in the circus. They're doing that every single time. And similar to the Young Bucks, I think he's figured out, thank God Reggie must have convinced them to let him wear if you notice today, he was wearing instead of his shoes, because almost every other time he was wearing those wingtips or those bare, you know, as is the fashion now for most young men, wearing the nice shoes, the felt shoes with no socks. He was wearing like his athletic, like more like gymnastics or wrestling shoes. So I think they're figuring out slowly but surely ways to sneak the vitamins into the applesauce, so to speak. And then you have a guy like Tozawa, who for years I swore, just put him and Apollo together again. They can be so entertaining. The language barrier won't be that big a deal. And then you have this man at 10:23 p.m. on a Monday night come out here and scream freaking ninja power can someone tell that man, like, you know, it's like the Matt Damon stuff. Like, there is a certain age you get where you don't have the excuse of, I grew up in a different time.
Yes.
And that's where he is now. You can't have Akira Tozawa dressing like a ninja because you think all Asian guys are ninjas and screaming ninja power like he's a freaking ninja turtle when he's one of the best. Well, you have so many wrestlers, I can't even say he's one of them. It's asinine. That's my word of choice anytime I go to something like this with Vince McMahon. It just absolutely boggles my mind, and that's why I don't watch Raw as much when I have the opportunity not to. Because I don't want it to be something where I'm just sitting there for 3 hours just stewing and, cursing the name of Jimmy Smith.
Yeah. Yes. All right, very good. I'm going to sneak in Kyle from Baltimore, then we'll go to Javier to wrap things up here. Kyle, thanks for holding so long. Somebody had to be in the last caller position before Javier joins us. What stood out tonight for you?
So I just wanted to just talk about the women's division in general and Raw and also what they're doing, just the two major championship matches for SummerSlam, of how they're handling the two championship matches for all four championship matches for SummerSlam for Goldberg and Lashley, I'm not a fan of, and the triple threat match. I'm not a fan of neither of these matches at all compared to Sasha Bianca and Roman Reigns and John Cena. It's like, I think I'm more so super invested in SmackDown. It's that the fact that they have still have this Nikki Cross as champion is so not good. It's not. I'm not five. I am 24. It's not five. This is so not. This is not what I'm into. And it's like, and she's winning against Charlotte and Rhea. I can't honestly believe that. I can honestly believe that. And it's like, it's to the point where that Becky does come back, which I don't know at this point. I'm starting to wonder if she ever is coming back at this point. It's just like, it's to the point where she needs to come back to the title from Nikki Cross, because I don't care for Rhea no more as champion. I don't care for Charlotte's champion. I don't care for Nikki as champion. It's like, no one's working for me at all in the women's division at all in Raw. And it's like, it's the way they've been booking these women. And I'm not interested in either. It's like, because I like Alexa, but her thing with
getting a lot of interference or something, Kyle, with your connection. I'm not sure if you're going around.
I don't know. I can't help it, but it's the phone. It's not my side. It's the phone's problem, I think.
Yeah.
This is my whole point. Is that the fact that the women's division is on rise and all that great, and the way they've been booking the champions at this point, the way they've been booking Bobby Lashley is good, but his opponent hasn't been all that great either. His to Kofi Kingston, to Drew McIntyre, and now Goldberg. It's like, ugh, I'm not into that either. So, what do you think? Do you feel the same way about the fact that how they booked their main champions on both shows is completely bad on Raw and really great on SmackDown?
What was the last thing you said, Kyle? Who? I didn't catch it.
Said the way to book the champions on SmackDown's way was better. How they book the champions on Raw and how all that, yeah.
Yeah. Rich, is it a personnel? Is it a personnel issue? Is it something else? Is it super serving Fox and Raw at the leftovers? How does it work?
I think part of it is the 2-hour window that we got to start right there. And when you have a 2-hour window and you know out of 8 quarter hour segments, Roman's getting 3 of them, you're in pretty good shape because you know he's going to carry his weight. Then you go from, you know, with the women's champion, Bianca's done well with hers for the most part. And then your secondary champion, in this case, Apollo is kind of there. And so it's kind of on that end. On the other side, Raw with Bobby. Bobby tried to carry like what, 3 of the 12, and that still was kind of but yeah, the biggest thing is with the women's division, as you mentioned, Kyle, the fact that your champion is a complete champion but almost a superhero, like work in progress, like I'm not there yet, but it's just counterintuitive to what she needs to be in that role. And this isn't like Nicholas, when Nicholas won the tag titles with Braun Strowman, where you have this clear, like, okay, this kid would not win otherwise. We've seen Nikki Cross as a good wrestler outside of this character. It's just that this is the only way they've determined that they'd allow her to kind of get to that rarefied air of the title scene. So, and if Becky pulled the greatest troll in the world of never coming back yet, always being within 5 minutes of whatever arena they're in, that would be quite hilarious. I think it's the 3 hours. I think that's the main thing. And then from there, it's the, everything just trickles from there, because you want to stretch everything out. And it's like when you used to make lemonade and you just add a little bit too much water to the mix, and the whole thing's messed up. And that's where it is. Everything's so diluted that you're trying to stretch a segment that should be 7 minutes to 15.
Yeah.
You're trying to have Drew McIntyre out of there instead of Drew having a tight 5 minute open the show, establish I'm the face of the show, the Raw brand is the face. The face is the face. Oh, that's so repetitive. I apologize. But that's what happens. And because he's there and you got to stretch it another 3 minutes, you give him the sword. And, you know, all my who's the boss jokes on Twitter aside, you know, at least back when they were giving Sheamus these stupid stories about when he was in Ireland, he would have his uncle, his uncle, and he got the shillelagh, blah, 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 blah. Sheamus had, you know, even now with his Peaky Blinders looking persona, he kind of has an ethos to him. Drew, you you don't hear him talking, but they're using the announcer or the interviewer backstage to illustrate that the sword is at least 5 feet tall. And that's all they're trying to get through the segment. And then you have him going up against, as I mentioned before, you put him up against Jinder Mahal. You're defining him down. You're pulling him off the ledge of where he should be and down to where Jinder is. And it's not like a rising tide raising all boats. It is a sinkhole. And they're both getting sucked down. And Jinder sending his goons to have a sword fight with chairs. Like, okay, if you're running away scared, I get it. Call the cops because the guy just pulled a sword on you.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a normal thing.
I know.
And even thinking about that, like, you have a man with a finisher named the Claymore with a Claymore. That is too on the nose. For the love of God, someone, like, if you talk about redundancies, whoever's coming up with these ideas, that is a redundancy. Like, they don't understand. His finisher's a Claymore. Now he's got a Claymore. And again, me being the fantasy nerd, if you have Excalibur, you become King Arthur by pulling it out of the stone. Why is he putting it into the stone every match now? It's like these little things, like they make no sense. And when you watch it and you're watching it make no sense and it's 3 hours long, you just get mad. And when you're watching SmackDown, sometimes Roman does the same. That's Dirty Secret. Roman is doing the same thing every week for the most part with the exception of getting pretty spicy with his promos. But it isn't as bad because it's 2 hours and they keep it tight. Once it gets loose and once that magic recipe starts getting diluted, that's if you're not going to be creative, that's when the whole sweater starts falling apart, so to speak.
Kyle, anything else for us?
I feel like it's just so not good. And the fact, too, and also that part where Eva Marie just attacked Alexa is like, okay, so during the match, can you just trip and do this match at this point? I'm like, I just feel sorry that Alexa's part is doing this thing with Eva, but I guess you have these two women who come up with new characters with each other and have a try to see where they're going to be feeded with each other. For months and months and months, they've been hyping up saying, coming soon. And Alexa, he said, I'm going to attack someone. Eva Marie said, coming soon. And then them two are facing each other. It's not good. It's not what I expected. These two to face each other after months and months of waiting and them returning on TV. So, I don't know. This whole thing with Alexa, I'm starting to... Alexa's really great in her role. She's fantastic. She's a great actress and a great, and I think a good enough wrestler. I just think that is this thing with Eva is not working and not what I had in mind, but I guess that was just it. This the whole women's division in general on Raw is not great, and I always look forward to SmackDown every week, especially now Sasha's back. So, that's it. It's all cool.
All right, cool. Thanks, Kyle. The two-drop Eva Marie thing, I mean, it has potential. If Eva was just a little bit better to still be bad enough that you had heat with her, but not so bad that she couldn't pull off what she was trying to do. And Doudrop, you know, being okay still being with her. It's like, I mean, it's already been too long. Like, I mean, you just, what? She started off aware of how she was being treated, and she now hasn't done anything about it long enough that you're sort of like, well, now it's on her. So I just,
right.
Conceptually it's there, but they just went about it poorly.
Yeah, it goes back to the idea of facers are idiots. And so she realizes she's being abused, but she's staying. Why?
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to tell you why. We're just going to say she's staying. Deal with it, dummy. And then now I'm the face. We as fans and viewers are faces, and we're the people with the dummies because we're watching and they're saying, well, we're not going to tell you why we did things. You just keep watching. Maybe we'll tell you. Maybe we won't.
Yeah. All right. We'll wrap up here with Javier in terms of phone calls. PW Torch VIP podcaster and PWTorch.com contributor, Javier Machado. Welcome to the roundtable segment. Let's see if there's music here. Wait, there we go. All right, Javier, welcome.
Hi, Rich. Hi, Wade. How's it going?
Good.
How are you?
Hang in there, bro. Good talking to you, man. You're almost never on these things. So, I guess Wade had to call in the big guns after last Monday's co-host.
Yeah, that was a disaster.
Oh, gee. No, no, he didn't. I know the co-host last week was quite fine. I listened to it and I thought it was A-okay. I'm just in because Wade, this is, you see, this is, as I mentioned on everything, this is part of my my monk-like flagellation. And, you know, I made too many jokes about Paul Roma being the best horseman, so now this is my atonement. 3 hours of draw.
Yeah. I want to go ahead and start with what unironically was probably my favorite segment, not including the main event, and that was the Mansoor Ali thing. Just because when I see that match and I'm like, okay, so we've got two competing things here. Number one, the story that they're telling for Mansoor and Ali is that they're getting these unlikely wins and they might actually have something together. So this is not the time for them to lose. But then this is Ali's hometown, and he got – so he's not going to win. So I was trying to figure out throughout the entire match how this was going to turn out, whether, you know, the story wins out or whether whatever Vince McMahon's fascination with the hometown boy losing or hometown girl losing is, and Vince McMahon's fascination won. But the reason I liked it was just Ali when the Retribution got behind him and he knew he was screwed, and he saved Mansoor, and that was like an awesome moment for that character. And I gotta believe that was something that he came up with himself to basically save the segment of the story.
Yeah, I could see that, especially considering he knew he was going to be getting the prerequisite WWE loss in the hometown. So let's find some way to kind of save this, because you're right. I think him and Mansoor were doing really well together. I like the relationship, even the little motion of pre-match. He's doing his pre-fight entrance, and Mansoor comes behind him, and he's so excited. He's hugging him, lifting him in the air, and he's kind of like, get off me. He's like the little brother that's just happy that the older brother brings him with him to like whatever grown-up kid thing they're about to do. And so I really appreciated the earnestness that Mansoor brought to that. And, yeah, I just hope that they continue this, because I look across and I watch Space Jam with my son and my family this weekend. And I look at those Mace and T-Bar, and they're Monstars, and they're just treated like furniture. Like, for a guy who loves big guys, those are two ginormous men, and they're just Mad Max extras still, and I don't quite get it.
I thought Ali and Mansoor was like one of the most enjoyable aspects of this show. I mean, there were aspects of the show that were fine, but that's the one where I was like, okay, they're Ali's trying here, his facial expressions are worth studying and reading into, he's putting a ton of thought into it. He's, you know, fighting a system that might be, you know, derailing things. He's trying, but he's just always just getting back up, and his acting, and then his wrestling, and then the crowd support. It was just like, this is what you want to see more of when you watch Raw, which is wrestlers who are good and care on a journey that you can get invested in. And I keep giving more chances to whatever he's involved in, because I know that's where his heart is.
Yeah, I agree. I apologize. Go ahead, Javier.
The next
thing
was
here's the rule with Javier. We edit all this out afterwards, but there's a delay with Javier. So when someone stops talking, you wait 5 seconds for Javier to talk. But if you start talking at the 4 second mark, we get in this cycle, and then it's just awkward. So.
The editing comes in. Oh crap! Okay, well thanks, Wade. Okay, so now I know.
Yes. go ahead, Javier. No, it's totally human nature to fill silence. And I'm like, oh, God, is this going to talk at the 4 second mark before Javier starts talking at the 5 second mark? And then it just all falls apart. Yep.
See, this is why you need to be on these things more often, Rich.
Yeah, see, I clearly got to go back to remedial pro wrestling, the Wade Keller post show. I'm going to get my notes. I'll get the gentle notes. Here are some things. But, you know, in minute 56, I thought that really that pause, you needed 6 seconds. You gave me 5.
Yeah.
Clean it up, fam.
Javier, if you could anticipate when I'm going to stop talking and start talking like 3 seconds before that, it would all work out well.
All right, so
Javier,
is that quick enough?
I just did. Yeah, that was pretty good. People are going to miss this. So, just edit it out. Only live listeners get this, unless I forget.
They're probably all hanging up by now. So I'm curious, where's this almost thing going to go? Because it's pretty much booked as the most powerful thing on the planet right now.
I thought that too. I mean, when you've got Riddle, who's potentially, after being defined down and on the Matt Riddle Redemption Tour on a scooter, and they still, they treat him and script him to be kind of a lovable dope, but still a dope, but the fans like him, and he's good enough in the ring to deliver main event quality matches, and he loses, in a handful of minutes to Amos clean, you've defined him down in a way that's hard to come back from. So they better have something really big in store for Amos, but I don't know what that end game is. Rich, do you have a theory?
I think he's going to start that path of, unfortunately, moving from tag wrestler to singles wrestler. If they do a Queen of the Ring this year, I'm assuming they may do a King of the Ring, and they might go with King Amos.
Who are his opponents that makes jobbing Riddle count and worth it?
After King of the Ring, going after Bobby or whomever the WWE champ is, like, let's say it's my crazy theory of Goldberg beating Lashley and Lashley then kind of taking it out on Goldberg and then Big E cashing in on Goldberg and having this big mini men slapping meat trademark match. And then now you got him, God help him, versus Amos. Good luck, Big E.
Your answer proves the point. There's nowhere they can go. That may be worth sacrificing Riddle.
Well, I think they see Riddle as essentially, the stoner from that 70s show, or, Charlie Sheen and Two and a Half Men, just this lovable, like you said, the lovable dope. And if he was already in that position when they started pushing him, I think he's already been defined now, and it's just now catching up to him. Because they stopped mentioning the fact that he's like an ex-UFC fighter. They stopped mentioning that this is a guy who has like bona fides as a, he could be a shooter, but he's a scooter riding, flip-flop kicking dope.
But now he jobbed to Amos clean, and that's a problem. Javier, your thoughts?
Yeah, and in a pretty one-sided match too. That's the my brother is behind on the show, and he texted me. Do they just Worf effect Riddle? And yeah, that's he was destroyed to show how awesome Almost is, and that's the thing. It's like who's his equal? he's by leaps and bounds booked stronger than anybody else on the show. Lash is the only one almost as strong, but yeah, it's just, I don't I don't see where it's going, because he's also not really a compelling like character. So he's somebody that would need like a manager or something. So, just weird. Rich, you mentioned about the Keith Lee's reaction when he won and he was emotional and people were just expecting something else to happen. It's because of how WWE books their wins and losses. I was on the same track, because since it was another clean win, I'm thinking, my thoughts were more along the lines, what did Cross do to upset Vince? What did, why are we seeing a clean finish here? Whenever I see a clean finish now on Raw or on SmackDown, I'm wondering, what did someone do, or what are they trying to tell us with this? Because it's either going to be a roll-up for a fake finish to protect, the loser, if they want to give you a loser, or it's going to be a distraction, or it's going to be something. And when you actually get one of the few rare finishes that's an actual move finish, you have to ask, okay, so why?
Yep.
You know.
Yep. Totally.
And, Yeah, and it's like totally like, you know, do they not care about the person who lost in this case? And they're
the same thing.
You
know, you're right. I mean, I think the same thing. When there's not a distraction or a screwy finish, you think it's punishment and someone's getting buried, and that is an indictment of the booking philosophy and the execution of it.
Oh, I just wrote this note here. I forgot. Earlier on the podcast, Wade, you said I usually don't swear on the show, and then you didn't swear.
He saved it for later.
Yeah, I got one.
Yeah, it didn't come in until much later, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
I just found that funny. Like, I usually don't swear on the show, and then you just continued like normal. I'm like, and I'm still waiting for it. It's like,
I think it was my indication that like. I'm not even that tempted. You know, I'm not tempted to. It's just not a big part of my normal speaking style. And yet, so when I say I don't normally, that means I have an urge to, but I still might not.
I just thought it was a nice preview that he knew you were coming on, and he just had a delay between why he usually doesn't swear, and then he swears.
Yeah, that's
after
like,
editing, it's going to be like right then. It's like, I usually doesn't swear. Boom.
There you go. What else, Javier?
I over to Drew McIntyre, because I was afraid about the sword becoming the gimmick, and it took a little bit longer than I expected, but here it is, the sword being the gimmick. Although I was rather the Chicago crowd, one of the few things that actually came through was that they were rather bloodthirsty. They wanted Drew, I guess, to kill, Jinder and his two goons. Because that's one of the few things that came through on the audio like that I could trust.
I think they were okay with Drew on offense. I think they were not at all interested in anything else that was part of that calculation.
Yeah, because, I mean, they were like, you know, because I think he mentioned that, yeah, in the he had an interview after that, right? And he mentioned that, you know, they were bloodthirsty. But, I'm so, like, that's the one that has bugged me the most since WrestleMania, since that loss. Because, I mean, they had a guy who could have been, you know, the one of the established, like, top guys. And I don't know if he ever could reach to that level and just be one of the top guys in the top mix. But I thought they had something special with him. They might have something special with Damian Priest, because I've really liked the way that he handles himself. But, like, I don't know. My faith is not high with these guys.
Yeah, nor should it be. I mean, I don't know what more to say. I mean, they should have been protecting Riddle and Keith Lee and Karrion Kross for all their flaws and accentuating their strengths. And Drew, they had something, and it is wavering. It's still there, but it needs to be seized. And, yeah. And they had some of those Sheamus, too. I mean, Raw was in much better shape a few months ago than it is now. Or, you know, pre-WrestleMania, maybe even right after WrestleMania. It kind of hit a low point in terms of booking and where a lot of the individual wrestlers are who were really putting in good performances and I think winning fans over, and they just they're returning to crowds at a time when I think they're at a pretty low lull in their wrestlers being treated in a good way and being utilized well, where there's any sense of momentum for them.
Sticking them in mud. It's absolutely sticking them in mud and then going in reverse. And now that you see it, it's hard to unsee it. Like, one of the earlier callers mentioned with the, and I didn't even get a chance to agree. Yeah, I started to lower the sound once I heard the reaction.
Yeah.
And that's when I had the Stardom 5-star Grand Prix on in the background as well. And that's when I was listening. You know, I would rather listen to Japanese commentary than hear Jimmy Smith, which again, sounds like this is going on the best that Wade Keller talks about Jimmy Smith. But Jimmy Smith one of these days is just gonna look dead in the camera and just get bleeped out as he's cursing Wade out, and then that would be the most animated he would have been on. See, again, I swear Wade is like just taking over my mic.
Well, it's funny because I was a little bit higher on the – because since he wasn't Virk, I was high on him like the first like 2-3 weeks. And last week was when I was like, yeah, you know, and I thought Wade was a little bit harsh, but last week I was like, no, that I'm done with him. It was the Mansoor Ali match last week when I think it was Mansoor like kind of breaks out of a hold and he says, "You got to be kidding me," and he's going to a roll up, but he hadn't like completed the roll up yet, and it was like,
yeah.
You know, he went for a roll-up, and he said, "You got to be kidding me." And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, seriously? Like, what? He did nothing.
Yep. Yep.
You know, I mean, it ended up being the finish, but, you know, you would think he didn't know that, or you wouldn't call it before the finish happened. But, yeah, I definitely – see, now I'm ranting on Smith. So.
It's a panda. It's like the zombie movie. It just keeps spreading.
It's just, man. But yeah, it's and then the I'm jumping all over the place. On the Keith Lee and Karrion Kross. I mean, at this point with Karrion Kross taking another loss, and the fact that they're having him come out, if you're gonna like have him around and have him do this stuff, having him come out with the belt, and the way that they're like, this is the NXT champion, folks. And then you have them lose.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be a thing at this point. It's got to be a thing, right? Is like Vince upset that they rehired Samoa Joe over on NXT because it's
across that way, yeah.
They stopped mentioning Charlotte being an NXT champion, which happened while she was already in the main roster. So they don't mention that, but why would you mention this one and make sure everybody knows it when, unless you're sending a message or you're trying to sabotage something and it's your own show.
If you watch the series Succession on HBO and you think it's unrealistic, you are not following Vince McMahon's trajectory as an executive in his 70s.
Well, I get it. I get the insanity of involved with those kind of people, but it's like to the level of just getting into his mind. It's like, well, if he's already lost faith in the company, then what's the point? Now you're just showing how awesome other wrestlers are. You know, it's just annoying and.
Yep.
But it's funny because it's like Bethany, my former co-host on the New Japan Pride podcast, she heard me on last week's show, and she texted me, you were so negative because I've always been positive around her, and she goes, you're so negative, and I'm like, it's Raw, I mean, you know. So you had a question, I think it was about Wyatt, was it?
Oh, I was just like, is there any reason, is there a match that wasn't a letdown, even if you got excited by the hype?
Oh, for the Fiend?
Yeah, for the Fiend or Bray Wyatt, anytime. When did he ever exceed conventional expectations?
I wouldn't say conventional, but the only two times that any of his storylines actually had a good payoff was the Daniel Bryan one, and that wasn't so much wrestling based but story based, because that's what completed Daniel Bryan's turn from heel to face, and it worked with the storyline the whole mythos of the character and the Firefly Funhouse. That was the other good, because it worked with everything, although kind of undercut by them not having any follow-up with John Cena. The only follow-up that that Cena gave, and I had read, I think, an interview or something he had said, while he was promoting one of the movies that he was saying, that when he comes back, he looks forward to, seeing how his character changed over what happened in the Firefly Funhouse. And then I'm like, that's probably not going to happen. And sure enough, he comes back as the normal Cena, and all that we got, which I think was a nod to the fans, was he had a throwaway line saying, you know, did I come here to address my, you know, what happened to me in the funhouse? You know, no. And they moved on to something else. Cause you know, and I thought that, that felt to me like a wink and a nod as like, yeah, I would have liked to have done something because it could have been something transformative for him. He could have come back and said, he some things that he said were off base, but some things were true. And, you know, just come out as like, instead of being the George wearing, you know, looking like a 10-year-old at best, and then actually, you know, and then maybe show up and, you know, go up against Reigns just saying that, hey, look, you know, you're doing now what, you know, I unintentionally did, but you're doing it on purpose. It's something along those lines. You could have had a good story out of that. But.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, yeah. You know, it's you gotta bring him back the way that he was stamped in carbonite. So
yeah, all right, Javier, any closing words for us tonight?
Well, actually, give me half a second. Yeah, I have to edit that out. Sero quam numquam. That was better late than never. Written in History of Rome in 27 BC by Titus Livius. So that is the original origin of that.
Wow.
And the first, first time in print was Canterbury Tales by Geoffrey Chaucer.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Hey,
so you made me look it up because you brought it up. I'm like, you know what? I might as well look it up because I'm interested too.
And better late than never for interesting historical facts.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Javier. Appreciate it as always.
Have a good
night. You bet. All right, Rich, we will save emails for another show because we ran long here and had some good macro and micro conversations on this show. RIP Matt Riddle's credibility. You know, RIP, I don't know. We could do a lot of things. But fun conversation. Heated, contentious, and passionate at times throughout Rich. Not you, but, you know, me and some of my targets. I think and hope reflective of the Raw product right now and where they need to correct course just the head scratching Cross Lee stuff that just, it seems like they're trying to fix it and then make it worse. Yeah. Anyway, Rich, any closing words from you, social media or otherwise?
Sure. I would say we went through the woods. I currently am furiously just throwing darts at the dartboard. No, I poor Jimmy Smith. It just ripped Jimmy Smith. Not that he died. It's just that his career is in shambles after this episode. But if you did enjoy what you heard Wade, myself, Javier, and all the wonderful people talk about tonight, feel free. I'm on Twitter at @rich_fan. Wade's quest to get me at @therichfan. I might do @rich_fan at some point. Is underway still, but @rich_fann. And you could always find most of my work here at the Torch, almost all of my work now here at the Torch. You could either find it on the VIP side with everything with Wade or on the Daily Cast side with myself doing the deep dive or the PW Torch East Coast cast with Travis Bryan and Cam Hawkins. I usually do the VIP portion of that, but I also sometimes jump on if Travis needs me, if Cam might have to go away during the free portion. I would not say, as always, not minivan, not living room friendly, definitely more of a garage / overhanging the rest of the house type friendly. So definitely take a listen to those. And thanks again for having me on, Wade. I did not have a bad time doing this or watching Raw. I can say Raw was rough, but it wasn't something I was like hate watching. I absolutely could watch it and kind of take what I liked and take what I didn't and kind of go for it.
Yeah. By the way, I had someone email just and said I was on hold for a while. I went to the show in Chicago. He didn't bring me on, and I forgot to tell callers to push one on their phone, even though I always do that. So I apologize to what was his name here? Richard.
Another Richard.
I was at the show. I called in. I was like, oh, I forgot to say push one when he called in. So my apologies. Would have gone even longer, or we would have had to exclude a call or shorten things up, which might have been good anyway. But a shout out to Chicago. Somebody did come through for us, and I didn't come through for them. Follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller, and follow our brand at PW Torch on Twitter. Thanks, Rich. We will talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Wade.
You bet.